Good evening. Let's call this meeting of the county board to order. It's Tuesday, August 28th, 2012. The time is 6:03. Please turn down your cell phones and put them on vibrate. Or turn them off. Roll call, please.
McGinty.
Here.
Michael.
Here.
Mitchell.
Here.
Mosher. O'Connor.
Here.
Petrie.
Here.
Quisenberry.
Here.
Richards.
Here.
Gonzalez.
Here.
Schrader. Alex.
Here.
Ammons. Anderson.
Here.
Benzel. Burson.
Here.
Betts.
Here.
Carter.
Here.
Howard.
President.
Esri.
Here.
Holderfield.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Tipler.
Here.
Kurtz.
Here.
Langford.
Here.
Maxwell.
Here.
Weibel.
Yeah, we have a quorum. Seek approval of the agenda and the addendum.
So moved.
Second. Mr. Betts, second. Mr. Kibler. Discussion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Tonight, of course, is our second night of budget hearings for the county. After each one tonight, instead of asking for a motion to put on file, I ask for an omnibus motion at the end of the session. So first up is auditor.
Before we start, I'd just like to go over a couple of things with you. First of all, you have at your desk one document that's three-hole punch. It's a circuit clerk document. If you would just please insert that as the last page under the circuit clerk section in your book. It's the circuit clerk e-ticketing fund. Secondly, before I start, I just want to remind you of the budget process resolution that was approved by the board, which was the direction given to the general corporate fund department heads. And you have here tonight the general corporate fund department, all of them. But in addition to that, for any department who also has special revenue funds, we're including that department's special revenue funds with their general corporate fund department budget. With the general corporate fund, you provided direction that in addition to increases in personnel, that if a department required an increase in a line item because of a contractual obligation, because of an ongoing increase in the overall cost of the item, particularly with commodities, most notably with gasoline and oil, that they should fill out a line item justification form to tell you why they are requesting more in the budget for 2013 than what they had for 2012. In addition to that, if they had any new requests for funding, they were to complete a program change request. The line item justification form documentation that you see throughout, those increases are included in the budgets that are being presented to you tonight. They're already in. The program change requests are not included. So starting with the auditor, the auditor's budget is very substantially the same as it has been in the past. The largest revenue source is the auditor charges funds outside of the general corporate fund for accounting fees. You'll see that that revenue in 2011 actual was $135,000. The budget for 2012 was $100,000, and the projected is $120,000. We're projecting $120,000 for 2013 as well. $75,000 of that basically comes from RPC and the funds that they administer. $25,000 to $26,000 comes from the nursing home, and the balance comes from the other special revenue funds, highway, mental health fund, animal control, etc. So that's really the primary revenue stream to the auditor's budget. It was higher in 2011 because the nursing home caught up on some payments in 2011. They paid about 18 to 20 months worth instead of just 1 year's worth. Expenditures are primarily Personnel expenses, 97.5% of the total auditor budget is in personnel. And there were no changes to their line item requests. The audit, you'll see that the auditor's office has 5.5 staff positions, full-time equivalents, and has for the last 5 years. There is a program change request from the auditor. He is requesting that one part-time accountant position be increased to full-time. Any questions about that?
Mr. Alex?
With the retirement of Ms. Wadley, my expectation was that we might have to backfill effort in the auditor's office with additional effort from the outside auditor, based on discussions I've had with you and others. Did that, in fact, have to take place? And if so, is that reflected in the budget?
It is not reflected in the budget, and that would be in the 2012 budget. Additional expense potentially.
Or in the 2013 budget going forward, depending on the availability of.
The 2013 budget going forward does maintain the salary of the chief deputy auditor as it was when she left, rather than taking it back down to the minimum, which is what we typically do with a vacancy. Our current outside auditor cannot, and I may not have known this when I talked to you, cannot provide assistance to us in daily accounting and auditing functions. We could work with another private auditing firm. Only the auditor can hire a chief deputy or hire a firm to provide consulting services. To my knowledge, the auditor has not done that.
Among other things, when we have an auditor in the office, is it your expectation that they will hire somebody equivalent to the chief, or to Ms. Wadley? I mean, somebody of equivalent experience? Is that where we're holding the salary line open?
We're holding the salary line open because I believe that in some form that's going to be necessary, whether we're hiring someone, and then if we hire someone with less experience, I believe we're going to need some consulting assistance from a professional firm to get that individual up to speed. It just depends, and there it's just so unknown right now. The most proactive thing I could think of to do would just leave the salary level at what it was.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
I notice on a number of the budgets provided for us, there's a state paid salary stipend. Could you just explain that overall?
Overall, there are certain elected officials who receive a stipend from the state. It's in the statutes, but it has to run through the county because it becomes part of their annual wages. So the state basically pays it, and we acknowledge it in the accounting system as both revenue and expenditure. It's a revenue neutral item because you'll see it in the expenditure line matching the revenue line.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kibler.
Thank you, Deb. First question, and just came to me now. You said that $75,000 of the accounting fees are RPC, $25,000 is nursing home. You have a remainder of $20,000. Is that coming from all of the different aspects of the county? Like, are individual departments paying the at least making it equal so that yes, we're using the services, therefore we're paying you, even though it's kind of netting out?
We don't, because all of this is paid, the auditor's office is completely paid for by the general corporate fund.
Okay.
General corporate fund departments are not billed. It's okay. Non-general corporate fund departments, special revenue funds, and the enterprise fund, which are billed.
So there's no real way to determine, okay, this particular office is taking this much resource away from the accounting department, the auditor's department, more so than others, just to kind of get a feel of who's using the auditor more so than others?
It's based on the number of transactions. The way they bill it, it's based on the number of transactions. So you can assume that among the RPC funds, they do three times as much accounting business or as many payments, payables, as the nursing home fund does.
Okay. And then my second question, looking kind of jumping ahead to the IT budget too, but staying with this, it seems that there may be a need to replace this auditing system. Is there anything in particular that the auditor's office is considering long-term or maybe even medium-term for this system?
Well, that's something that we frequently discuss. You heard about it from the outside auditor because of their concern that we have only one programmer who is able to work with the program language that this system is built upon, and this system was built approximately 40 years ago. But again, the accounting system is the responsibility of the elected auditor, and unless the elected auditor is telling you that they're ready to make a change, it's not something that you, the county board, can actually do. It's an auditor function and responsibility. We have talked about it, and Andy Rhodes, who's the IT director, can also expand on this. We have some experience with, you know, software purchased from vendors, and we have some frustrations there. County government tends to be very unique, so our preference might be to, you know, look at, and obviously this would be a major RFP process to get to this, but to maybe look at someone who could build a new system for us that we could maintain in-house over the long term, because we certainly, you know, we don't pay $20,000 to $100,000 a year in software maintenance costs on this program that was built in-house and has served the county for these last 40 years.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Batchel?
Just curious about policy for seeing the number of line items that, and last night I was looking at line items that were zero that were maintenance and janitorial. And
that's thanks to the accounting system. We can't seem to get rid of line items that we don't need to show. They were used once, and so now we can't get them to not show.
Do you take each of your departments and assess them a rent that they're you know, paying their proportional share of building maintenance and things like that?
No. All of the building maintenance for general corporate fund departments is assigned to the physical plant budget.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? I have one, Deb, on the, again, back to the state paid salary stipend. Notice that 2011 was $6,500, 2012 was $2,600, but projected at zero. So if we get nothing in 2012, why are we being optimistic for 2013?
What we've done is, I don't know if you recall, but you've done four or five budget amendments this year for those stipends. So what we've budgeted is what has been the historical typical stipend paid to the elected officials. If they don't receive it, you won't spend it.
Okay.
You still end up revenue neutral.
Gotcha.
And if they receive less, then you'll spend less.
Right.
And it just precludes the need for budget amendments next year.
So from a state viewpoint, we're still supposed to get it.
Right.
Okay. All right. Anything else? All right. Next one is Board of Review.
The Board of Review is a fairly straightforward and simple budget. It is 92% personnel, and that is for the three members of the Board of Review who are appointed by the county board. The rest of their budget is basically just operational costs. They do have educational requirements that they have to meet, so there is a budget for conference and training in the Board of Review overall budget. Other than that, I don't
questions
really...
on the Board of Review budget. Mr. Beginty.
Who is the chair of the Board of Review right now? I'm just curious.
Patton. Liz Bergner-Patton.
Yeah.
Patton.
Okay. Mr. Quisenberry.
So when we were talking about the Board of Review, I remember some discussion about the support of the Board of Review, that they borrow support staff from other departments?
Well, actually, the Supervisor of Assessments is officially the clerk of the Board of Review, and the Supervisor of Assessments office has always had staff who provide support to the Board of Review.
Okay, but there's no recognition in the budget of how much time the Board of Review gets from the staff. They don't have to reimburse for that?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Again, both budgets are in the general corporate fund, so it all becomes part of one big fund.
I just thought that that might be a way to really impress upon staff that they're partially paid to be a support for that group.
For the Board of Review?
Yeah.
And I think the Supervisor of Assessments and Board of Review has been working through that a little more directly than maybe previously.
Mr. Kibler.
Thanks, Deb. Just a little quick question. With respect to the concerns that were brought up previously with the Board of Review, in terms of overall key performance indicators and whatnot, is there anything that we could, or I guess a suggestion would be to add some sort of items in there that help reflect some of the concerns we had and hopefully address them over the next year?
Actually, that's something I plan to do, Mr. Kibler.
What'd you say?
I plan to do that.
You plan? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if there could be an assessment for a periodic for staff, maybe shift it from over in their department, the supervisor assessments, to the Board of Review. That way, maybe, you know, seasonally, that they could be able to ask for the for extra staffing.
I think they have some sort of informal arrangement. I'll look at the details of that, though.
I mean, that was.
I know they have a certain staff member, but they say you'll work with the Board of Review. But I know it's been that way in the past. I can't say what it is currently. I can check into that, though.
But I mean, I think just so that there's clarity, if we can take a little bit from the supervisor and move it over to the Board of Review so that seasonally they would be able to, you know.
Actually, I think it works well with sharing, and sometimes it's difficult if you work for more than one boss, so to say.
Yeah.
So the supervisor of assessments is officially the clerk of the Board of Review and has a responsibility to make sure his staff provides that support to the Board of Review.
Okay.
So it should work.
Okay. Thanks.
Any further questions? Mr. Carter.
So this is the function of the Board Review as a state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Holderfield.
I'm sorry to berate this just a little bit more, but that was one of the complaints from both the supervisor in assessment and the Board of Review, that the person, the clerk, that was supposed to be dual in helping out the Board of Review during their season, there was a big complaint that she never really knew when she was supposed to be working. So I have to agree with Jeff and Max and Quiz that maybe we need to have something designated as a salary. Maybe it's just for the fact that absolutely there's someone that needs to be in that office during the very extremely busy time, and so it's a job share that person would have, but understanding that there is a salary there that comes from the Board of Review that dictates that is something that she would have duties, or he would have duties to operate. Maybe I'm berating it, but that was definitely one of the largest complaints that came out of both of those offices. Thank you.
I'll talk to Mr. Jenkins about that. Ms. Petrie.
I'm not presuming to speak for Mr. Jenkins, but I did have a conversation with both the Board Review and this aspect, and the collaboration is working very well. And because I knew we were coming to budget time, I asked specifically if this is a topic we should be discussing, and they said no.
So. And quite frankly, the problem has only existed in the last 2 years. It did not exist in the 25 years preceding that, as far as I'm aware, and I think it's been resolved, as Ms. Petrie said.
Okay, further discussion. Next is the recorder.
The recorder?
Live and in person.
You can stand or sit.
Okay, I'm here to present my budget. I do have two sections to my budget. I have a general corp, and then I have a special automation budget. The special automation budget was set up in 1991 by the state legislature. What it does is it created a $3 fee added on to every recorded document that went into a fund to help automate, which technically means computerize the office and pay for those costs. So we can begin with the general corp budget, if you like. It's basically what it was the year before. My general corp budget is pretty slim because I've moved almost everything to my automation fund. You will notice that in the full-time employees, they are listed as an expense on my general corp, but if you look right above that, you'll see that I move money from my automation fund to pay for most of that expense. Any questions about my general corp fund?
There's quite a difference in the revenue and expenditure for revenue stamps.
Yeah. Okay, I can talk about that a little bit. Basically, what I write about is that my office is a little bit hard to plan for because it's so based on what the economy is doing. And the collapse of the housing market has really affected our office. We were doing upwards of 40 to 50,000 documents a year. That's been cut in about a half. We do generate revenue from a couple different sources, main sources, the first being recording fees, the second being revenue stamps. Every document that we record has a recording fee. The lowest recording fee is $25, and it goes up from there. If it's a deed that transfers title of property from one person to another, and if money is actually paid for the property, so unlike if it's a property that you own and you're transferring title to your son or daughter and you're just signing the property over to them, that would be exempted from paying transfer tax. Properties that you sell, however, are assessed $1.50 per $1,000 fee, a dollar of which goes to the state, 50 cents of which stays here in the county. That kind of is variable depending upon the sales of houses and properties. Now, this year, our transfer tax line item is high because we've had a large amount of farm ground that's sold in the county. So even though expensive homes are not selling, lower cost homes are still selling, and farmland has been selling incredibly well this year. Also, yesterday we had $22,000 in transfer tax that we took in one day. Bar Real Estate sold quite a bit of their property off. So it's kind of a, you know, one year we had Marketplace Mall that sold, and we took in $70,000 in one day just in transfer tax. So it's kind of a little bit of a variable. But in the line item that shows the money that we pay to purchase document stamps, that money comes back to the county by 150%. So 100% of it goes to the state, 50% of it stays here in the county. And then recording fee. The other thing is the rental housing surcharge. That was put in a few years ago, and what that is it's a $10 fee assessed to every document that transfers or has to do with real estate. So that not only includes deeds, it includes mortgages, releases, assignments. And what that does is $9 of it goes to the state, and it goes into a fund to help support low-income rental for families that need help, and $1 of it stays here in the county. So every month we send, it varies, but it's right around $20,000 every month we send off to the state. We do keep part of that here in the county. So both of those line items, even though they seem large, they are revenue gratifying in that they bring money back into the county, which exceeds what we spend on them.
Mr. Kibler.
Thank you, Recorder. So I'm just looking at the last line of the budget highlights. It talks about $1.50 per page, drops down to 15 cents per page, and the dramatic reduction. But in terms of the budget, it doesn't seem to really impact it. Where does that impact the line item? What line item does that impact, the copy fees?
The copy fees are, let me see if I can find the exact one. It would be under... No, it should be in my other miscellaneous revenue. I have one contact in 369.90.
Okay, so overall it's fairly minimal to your office.
Well, it was pretty huge, but what we did was this year we implemented a new program. We're the first in the state of Illinois actually to implement it. It's called Monarch. And what has happened in the past is that since everything that we record in the recorder's office is covered by the Freedom of Information Act, what companies would buy that information generally from title companies that are located locally, and they would use that to generate credit reports, things like that. We're now moving to skip the middleman, and we're moving to sell that information directly from us to those companies so that we can then control the information a little bit better and also generate more revenue. So we're hoping that that, as it builds each year, is going to make up for the difference in the actual copy fee loss.
Thank you.
Mr. Metzler.
How do you establish the recording fees?
The recording fees are set by state statute.
Line item 522.50, and maybe I just don't understand. The original on the purchase document stamps was 448, projected 7, but we're projecting 748 for the coming year when the actual, that's a 300,000 swing, and I didn't understand what that was. And then finally, if I can ask the second part, on page 13, it shows that your budget increases by 800,000, but yet our document fees and our revenue should be less. So I didn't quite understand that, how that all paired up.
When you look at the purchase document stamps line item in expenditure, mm-hmm. at the same time, look at the revenue stamps line item in revenue, and you will see that the increase in the revenue is greater than the increase in the expenditure. And that is the direct result of the number of real estate transactions, as Barb mentioned.
Right, and the fact that you can budget for a set amount that you're going to have to purchase. What we have is we actually have a post meter, and we get a check from the auditor's office for $120,000. We drive that over to the Department of Revenue in Springfield. We give them the check, and they put $120,000 worth of tax stamps on the meter. And then as deeds come in, we then print off, you know, and the meter goes down. So you can try and guess how much you're going to sell in revenue stamps for next year, but it's always kind of it's really just an educated guess is all it is. And this year, due to the large number of farm sales, we went higher than what I had estimated. So that's actually a good thing.
Well, I guess I was looking at the original versus the projected. Then on the revenue side, you're anticipating a $440,000 increase, but only a $300,000 expense. So is that where part of the anticipated projected versus budget 2012 versus 13 on page 13?
What happens is that for every dollar that we sell off the transfer tax machine, we get paid $1.50 for it. So for each dollar that goes, then we bring in $1.50. So that's the difference. Am I understanding your question? That's the difference between the expenditure and the revenue.
Okay, and that's great. But on page 13,
okay,
or if you have the last page there,
uh-huh.
it says 2012 budget $1.1 million. Then the 2013 budget revenue generated $1.9 million. So you're actually anticipating to increase the revenue by $830,000, but yet in the beginning, it's, you know, we're kind of in the middle of the recorder being down a little bit because of the sales and whatnot. I guess I thought that was quite a big number.
Yeah.
Considering you're anticipating the sales to be less.
Well, all I can do is go from the numbers that we've had in the past, and this number on page 13 is actually...
And less recorded documents are listed here, too, so I guess I just didn't understand the correlation.
Well, it's everything put together. It's the copy fees, it's the recording fees, it's the revenue stamps, it's the rental housing support. So not... Even though some things have increased over time, not all of that increase necessarily stays within the county. Some of it goes to the state.
I think there may be a typo on 2012, though, because you're showing total revenue for 2013, and your total 2012 revenue is projected at $1.8 million and originally budgeted at $1.4 million. Right. we used the total revenue budget on 2013 and 2012 and 2011. Only the revenue stamps, I think. So that's probably an error. It's a typo.
Great. That's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit about the staffing changes over time in your office? Because I heard earlier that you said you're processing about half as many sales as before.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it looks... I know I have to take both the automation fund and the office staffing into account. So it looks like over the last couple of years you're down one person.
We have had a position that has been unfilled since the death of one of my staff members. And during the flush times, when we were really, really busy, we were horribly understaffed. And still, to this day, we're understaffed compared to comparable counties within the state of Illinois. So I think that our staffing now is probably right about where it should be for the number of documents that we're doing. Back when we were really busy, we had documents everywhere. So right now, we're probably where we should be. If we get much busier, we may need to look at hiring another person.
And that unfilled position is not appearing in here
from the standpoint.
It's listed. Do you have a vacancy?
Yes, I have a vacancy. It's listed, but it's not funded.
So the salary for that's included in here?
I don't believe so. So in 2009, Barb had 6.5 total positions, and today she has 5.5. So she has one less than she did 4 years ago.
Okay, but if I look in the salary lines, it does not reflect.
It's for five positions funded in general corporate and a half a position funded in automation.
But if we started to get busy again and we needed to hire another person,
that would be a
budget amendment.
That would be an additional person probably coming out of my automation fund.
Okay.
Well,
uh-huh.
Microphone.
This doesn't really have much to do with the finances, but has to do with your mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
The last sentence there, to continue work to update archival records to new technology while maintaining their historical integrity. How do you maintain this historical integrity?
Well, I think we maintain our historical integrity by taking care of the old books.
By what?
Taking care of the old books, taking care of the old maps.
Care of the old books?
Correct.
What about, are there any new books being generated?
No, they're not. Everything is done electronically now.
So one lightning strike could eliminate it all.
Well, we do have three different backups, one of which is done in Rock Island, Illinois. So we do have quite a bit of off-site backup. We do have everything backed up on disks as well as on microfilm. So there are several.
Microfilm?
Yes, we do.
And that's acetate?
Canon will destroy those, Ralph.
It is stored off-site up in Michigan in a place where there's no vinegar syndrome. They watch for that. So if that's what you're worried about, yeah. I know, it is. I worry about it, believe me, especially in tornado season. I worry about it a lot. So it is taken care of. There have not been any books since 1975. 1975. So that's been pretty standard throughout the state of Illinois now. In fact, the state legislature just passed a law that says that we don't have to microfilm anymore.
Mr. Mitchell.
Uh-huh.
Are there any other data collection resources that you can sell to?
Right now what we're looking at are the biggest users. There's four of them. First American is the one that comes to mind. So we're just in the process of getting it started, but I'd be happy to come back and give you an update in a couple of months when things get rolling.
Yeah, it'd be great if you had more resources to sell the data to.
Yeah, I'm excited. I really am excited about it. So a lot of people are watching to see how it goes. So.
Other questions for the recorder? Mr. Carter.
Yeah. I have one about the $10. I thought, not criticized, but I'm just trying to understand.
Okay.
When you asked for that, I thought it was a benefit of the your office.
Right.
And
and I wonder why would the state take a 9 to 1?
That actually was a law that was put in a couple years ago by a lady up from up near the Chicago area in Cook County. And what it does is that it helps to generate money to supply housing for low-income families. The money is distributed by the state of Illinois to different areas depending upon their need and their size. And Cook County, I believe, gets about 70% of it. Collier County is get another 10 to 15% of it, and then the rest of it is kind of dispersed throughout the state. So
they've got billions of people up there.
Yeah, they do. They do. So that actually was something that we didn't have anything to do with. So we're just
stuck one on it.
Yeah, we just collect the money. So
Mr. Alex.
Follow up on that briefly. Does the county get any of that money back from the state? Do we know how that money gets spent by the state?
We have tried to find that out. We, meaning the recorders in the state of Illinois, we have tried to research that to find out the numbers of it, and we have not been able to get anywhere with that research.
Do we know where the dollars even go? I mean, do they go to the housing authorities? Do they go to Section 8? I mean, do we know who... It just
we have not. It evaporates.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised?
I don't know.
Further questions? Mr. Kibler.
You say that so begrudgingly. No, I would just a brief comment. Thank you so much. What I would love to see, though, from really everybody is on the performance indicators,
mm-hmm.
a little bit about customer service and making sure that we're performing the best customer service to our constituents. So if there's any performance indicators you can add in the meantime to talk about customer service and making sure we're giving the best quality we can, I would appreciate it.
Okay. One thing that I can just add is that I was one of 5 recorders in the state of Illinois that worked with Attorney General Lisa Madigan on the robo-signing, if you're familiar with that, that had to do with the collapse of the housing market. Basically, what it had to do with were that banks were recording documents through a company called MERS, which stands for Mortgage Electronic Registration System, and not recording them here in the counties. So when they went to foreclose on properties, they didn't have any backup showing assignments, releases, and that kind of thing. So they basically just set up little offices where they would assign somebody a short name that was easy to write. They would sign these fake documents, and somebody would notarize them, and they would send them out for recording. So they were totally fake documents. Lisa Madigan, I mean, she brought back, I think it was $38 million to the state of Illinois. We as recorders are hoping to get some of that. We're also running a seminar here in a couple months through the state for people that are at risk of losing their home, behind in their payments. They're able to bring in their mortgage documents, and someone will meet with them and see if they can get some counseling on how to progress. So lots of different things. I'll try and keep you better informed of those as they come about.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up is Supervisor of Assessments.
Okay, Supervisor of Assessments on the revenue side basically just has, there's a state salary reimbursement for half of the Supervisor of Assessments salary, and that's basically it for their revenue, that and a stipend. This budget is 90% personnel. One change that we've made that some of you are aware of, if you look on page 19, about two-thirds of the way down, line item 53370, legal notices and advertising. You'll recall earlier this year we went to a system of quadrennial assessment, and probably a couple weeks ago when you all got your Saturday News Gazette, you saw the 3 sections with nothing but parcel numbers and values. Well, that's the statutory requirement we have to publish that information, assessment information, in a local newspaper. But what we did this year to equalize it from a budgeting perspective, the supervisor brought to you and you approved a resolution where he does a quarter of the county each year. So the good news is we don't now have a $90,000 spike in that line item every fourth year. It will be equalized over every year, and it seems about $25,000 to $27,000 should cover that publishing requirement. So that was a change he made this year, which I think is positive for us for long-term budgeting for the general corporate fund. I really don't have anything else to point out about his budget.
Questions? Ms. Petrie.
On this conferences and training, is this something that's required by the state?
I believe there are some CLE require or CEU requirements for the supervisor himself. Yes.
Oh, sorry. Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you. I'd like to go back to the legal notice advertising. I know it's state statute. I'd love to be able to see us go electronic and save $25,000 every year. That certainly would, and then it wouldn't be a one-day notice, which it is in the newspaper. Then it's
well, the information is available on the website
on the
all
website.
The time.
We are subsidizing the newspaper industry.
That's exactly what we're doing, and I think it's time we went electronic on that.
It will come back. We'll take legislation to change that. And I think when they rigged the last deal, they said they'll leave that way for 5 years, but after that, they'll look at it again. So hopefully there'll be changes in the future. Mr. Mitchell.
If they were to, you know, completely digitize the information, and then would there be resources to sell that information to?
The information is publicly available at this time on the supervisor's website.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm talking about just going in depth if there is any resources.
For specific requests. At this point, I'm not aware, but that might be something to step. You know, maybe a legislative change.
Again, it's all controlled by the legislature. Mr. Quisenberry.
I seem to recall that the search capabilities on the supervisor's website were changed to get in the way of doing large numbers of search or looking up people by name. If he was going to consider selling that information to a third party, I would ask him to restore access to the public the same as they get by selling the information.
That's an issue that I'm pretty sure he would bring back here at some point if he were going to do that.
Okay. Questions about Supervisor of Assessments budget? Seeing none, let's move on to
Treasurer. The Treasurer's general corporate budget does generate a little more revenue than some of the others we've looked at other than the recorders. There is a line item for interest on delinquent taxes, which is $650,000, which is the majority of the Treasurer's revenue. The Treasurer's budget overall is 94% personnel. He has moved a lot of non-personnel expenses to his automation fund, which we'll see in a minute. Basically, he is presenting a request that is the same budget as what he had for 2012. Moving on to the County Treasurer Working Cash Fund. Working cash was that $377,000 you see there was originally generated by a property tax levy. That tax has not been levied in a very long time. But the working cash fund, as the treasurer has pointed out here, is basically a rainy day fund, primarily for the general corporate fund. So when the general corporate fund is in need of a loan, this fund is available to loan to it. Basically, whatever interest is earned on that working cash is the revenue for this fund, and it becomes an expenditure when it is transferred to general corporate for the general corporate benefit each year. Ms. Michaels?
I just have a question. Is this something we need to maintain in case there is? I mean, if it's not been used or being used, is this something we can delete? Is there a different way that we're doing loans now between departments?
No, it gets used.
Oh, okay.
It's in a fund where it gets used for the benefit of general corporate.
Okay, so it's
accomplishing what it was intended to accomplish.
Okay.
It's just, it would be nicer if it were $1 million than $377,000, but we don't have any way to increase it at this point. The County Treasurer Tax Sale Automation Fund is on page 28. This is for the treasurer to automate the operation of the tax sale, and the revenue comes from the tax sale fee of $10 on each item at the tax sale and an administrative fee of $5 for all duplicate tax bills that are requested by non-homeowners, so basically banking institutions.
operations. Generates about $35,000 of revenue a year. The treasurer has used this fund to improve and enhance the tax sale and some of the automation of his office for getting the real estate tax bills out each year. And finally, the property tax interest fee fund, and this is funded by the tax sale at a $60 per item fee, and this fund maintains a $100,000 fund balance. Everything over $100,000 is transferred to the general corporate fund, so this fund generates $67,000 of revenue for the general corporate fund every year based on how it currently functions. I would point out to you that the treasurer unexpectedly was not available tonight. He did want me to share this information with you regarding the operation of his office, which is on the blue sheet. I think mostly he wanted you to be aware that since 1999, his actual office expenditures have decreased by 43%, excluding personnel. And the increase in real estate taxes collected and the number of bills that he sends out and receives payments from has significantly increased over that same period of time.
Questions? All right. Seeing none, next is information technology.
Andy Rhodes, IT director, is going to present this budget.
The biggest change in my budget this year is the increase in revenue that we're going to try and achieve by billing back non-general corporate departments for IT services. So my revenue is going to increase from approximately $38,000 this year to hopefully $77,500 next year. And that's mainly, like I said, from reimbursement for staff services from non-general corporate departments. We also get some reimbursement from other departments, non-general corporate departments, for Kronos licensing and upgrades. That is a revenue item in 381.22, info technology expense reimbursement. That is down this year from what we anticipated because we were going to do a Kronos upgrade that we decided to hold off a year on doing. So next year we've left that line item the same at 21809 to cover the cost of a Kronos upgrade that we're due to do next year. As far as expenditures go, the majority of my expenditures are personnel costs, and also we handle the copier contract, so we have photocopy services in the amount of $185,000 a year, which covers our lease payments to Xerox. Other than that, my expenditures haven't really changed. I've kind of moved stuff around. This is only the second year we've had our own budget. So I've moved some stuff around from operational supplies and equipment less than $1,000. I've kind of changed some money around in those line items to better account for how we're spending our money this year. And then I do have a program change request form. We're requesting another mainframe programmer position for several reasons, primarily because we only have one programmer right now who can program on the AS400. He's handling all the accounting system and real estate tax system programming currently. He's in his early 50s. He's been here for 20-some-odd years, so in the next 5 years he's going to be looking to retire. And it would be nice if we could have somebody on staff that we could begin to transfer his knowledge to before he leaves. In addition, it's been pointed out for the second year in a row by the outside auditor that our current support levels for the accounting system are insufficient, and they would like to have something done about that. Their preference, of course, would be to have us buy a corporate software package so that we would have corporate-level support for it rather than have internal support, and that's something that we'll be talking about when we get to the discussions on replacing the accounting system, hopefully next year.
Questions? Mr. Carter.
I kind of slept over the day. I had a question in the supervisor.
Well, sorry.
And
Let's do it later, okay? Mr. James.
I noticed on your indicators, Andy, that you have PCs, laptops, and all that, and you're mainly the one that works on them, but who keeps the actual inventory count of all that stuff and maintains it?
Well, they're not... tagged as county property because the cost threshold is so low, they're considered more or less an office supply anymore. So we really don't have a formal inventory of from a cost standpoint. We maintain on our network Active Directory, which is like a listing of all the users and computers on our network, so we know which ones are out there. And we're responsible for deploying them, so we know when anything disappears. If that's your question, are you?
Well, I guess accountability, because I know other agencies, that's, PCs, laptops, all that stuff, mm-hmm. Usually moved out of a building, and even though in the scheme of things they don't cost much anymore, we are accountable to taxpayers.
Right.
If there's six of them missing, that's
right.
A big item.
So we know how many PCs the state's attorney has, we know how many laptops the state's attorney has. When it comes time to replace them, there's basically no extras. There's one assigned to every employee. So if a computer happened to disappear from here, there'd be somebody without a computer to work on. We just don't have any extras. Laptops are a different matter. We do have some departments that have their own laptops, and again, we have them on a replacement schedule. We know how many they purchased in 2009. We know how many are scheduled to be replaced in 2013. When it comes time to replace them, they have to surrender the old ones to get the new ones.
Okay, and one last question on my part. Of course, I'm not up to snuff. I still have a phone. You got to turn the dial on it. But anyway, what's a help desk ticket?
A what?
Help desk ticket.
We have a...
I was going to send in a few, but she just answered it.
Okay.
Ms. Michael.
Just a quick question here. Looks like from 11 to 12, we went up 240 laptops and PCs.
Yep.
But yet we only increased our mailboxes by 25. Are some of those dual, like maybe some of the...
Actually, those are reflected. The county clerk's office recently purchased 200 laptops for polling places.
Okay.
So that's where the count comes from. There's no employees actually associated with it. There's just more devices that we're kind of responsible for.
Somebody's out on the job versus inside, they'd have two. Okay, thanks.
Mr. Maxwell.
Yes, the proposed salary for the new programmer, does that include friends or is that salary?
That's just salary, and it's at the midpoint.
Thanks.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. I like the idea of billing out for IT services. I think that's a good idea. I'm a little bit curious about how you've come to what those amounts are, how you're determining what the bill is to the different departments.
Well, I identified a core set of services that we provide to all the departments, and because not every department takes advantage of every service that we provide, some departments are billed for all of our services, and some departments are billed for some of our services. So the categories that I have come up with are programming services and database services, which are both billed hourly, and then we have services that are billed by the number of users in each department, and those include network services, email services, server management, payroll processing services, user training, help desk, AS400 management, internet services, and the ID card system. And then there's two more categories that are billed based on the amount of storage that you use. That's storage services and web services.
All right, great. That sounds great. Kronos, what is the upgrade that you're delaying?
Kronos will only support us two versions back,
mm-hmm.
So we thought we were going to have to do one this year to maintain that two-version difference, but they extended it for a year based on the fact that most of their clients don't have enough money to do the upgrade, so they extended their support on the current version for a year, so we don't have to do an upgrade until next year.
And which Kronos product and version are we on?
We are on 6.
Okay. And then at one point, do we still have staff in other departments that are basically doing IT work?
Yes.
How many employees are in other departments that are really essentially doing programming or support?
Two.
Two. And are those both in the clerk's office?
Or? One is in the clerk's office and one is in the justice system.
Okay. Is there still opportunity to move those resources together into a central IT organization such that we don't have to keep hiring for particular needs? We can spread those needs across?
I will leave that to Deb.
That's what we would prefer, but the two technology positions that exist belong to elected officials, and it is the preference of those elected officials to maintain their own IT positions.
So we have an opportunity to maybe do things more efficiently for the public, but we haven't been able to find a way to get their degree on how to do it.
We keep working towards that, but I believe we have an IT position in the county clerk's office, and there's an IT position in the criminal justice system, and those elected officials, I think, believe that their unique needs are full-time and demanding enough that they want their own IT professionals. We, from IT's perspective, we think a centralized IT department is ideal, but...
Yeah, and full disclosure, since I'm in IT, I tend to agree with you.
Mr. Kibler.
You're in good company. There are, I think, three or four of us in IT and the board, so kudos for your hard work. My question, I think, may be more aimed towards Deb. A question regarding 371-6. Why are we pulling in nearly $60,000 from the public safety sales tax into IT?
I can take it. We have an agreement dating back several years that they would reimburse us for one position on our staff. It originally was a desktop support position, but the person in that position has been promoted to systems administrator, so the reimbursement for public safety sales tax covers his position.
And I wouldn't call it an agreement. The county board controls the public safety sales tax fund, and when justice technology became part of the public safety sales tax and that position was added, the board agreed that the sales tax would reimburse general corporate for that position.
There was a desire at that time because of the split in the campuses. The offices at the courthouse didn't feel that they were getting sufficient attention from IT at that time, and they requested, if possible, that we have a person dedicated to the courthouse. So in order to achieve that, we needed the money from public safety sales tax to cover the additional support position so that we could have one person at the courthouse most of the time and one person here at Brookings.
Mr. Alex.
Following up on Mr. Quisenberry's comment about outside IT staff, I think it was it you? Does that apply to RPC as well? I thought at one point RPC
hires their own
staff.
They have a consultant. He's not an employee. It's a consulting firm that provides IT services.
Does that include the service to the GIS consortium?
Or that's something that's currently being looked at.
Is that a yes, it still does? Or
it has in the past, and it's being looked at this point.
Okay, but at this point, you're not providing service to the GIS consortium.
At this point, we're not billing the GIS consortium for the services that we provide.
You are providing services, but
we are providing services to the GIS consortium. We have taken a lead in virtualizing their servers and coming up with a workable disaster recovery plan to keep the GIS public server and the private servers up and running in case of a disaster.
Okay, and that was actually leads into my final question. You have a lot of servers, both application and database servers. Are those virtual servers or are those?
Yes.
So when you say 55 some servers, that's not 55 boxes.
No.
That's 55 virtual servers. Okay.
We use Microsoft Enterprise server licensing, so we can put up to four virtual servers on each physical server.
Okay, and are those servers all co-located, or are they located out in the departments that use them?
They're located in IT.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mitchell.
Do you have security for all the funds that are transferred?
I can't hear you.
Do you have security for all the funds that are transferred?
Security, what do you mean?
That... firewalls and things so that people from the outside can't.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're complete. We have a Microsoft forefront threat management gateway that sits between us and the internet.
Okay.
And then the security, as far as internal security, is handled through Microsoft Windows Active Directory. So we can use Active Directory to put people in various security groups and then assign folder permissions and file permissions based on those security groups.
Okay, great, thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
Is there a reason we are not charging for this GIS work that you have been doing?
Because we don't currently bill any department for any services. We're not going to start doing that till next year. And the problems with GIS surfaced this year, so we stepped in to assist them in resolving some of the problems that they've been having.
If we continue providing service next year, they will be billed.
Absolutely.
By County IT for services provided to GIS.
Ms. Michaels?
So if I can talk about the extra person you're wanting to get, the billing to the departments would possibly cover the cost of the extra programmer?
No, that would have to be a budget amendment from General Corp.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question on that. Obviously, you have a person who's been on there a long time with an old system. Is a new person even going to know the language?
There are numerous languages that we can use on the IBM System I. We're not locked into RPG, which is the language that the current programmer uses.
Do they teach that anymore?
They don't teach it at Parkland. The last time I looked to find some place in Illinois where they did teach RPG, Moraine Valley Community College still offers RPG.
Okay.
But there are other programming languages that we can use, utilizing the AS400 as a more or less a very robust database server. There are ways to use Microsoft.net and visual languages against the AS400. There's also a product called Visual RPG, which is a more current version of RPG that can be used. Both .NET and Visual RPG would cost the county some additional money in terms of an interface between the AS400 and the programmer, so that the programmer could develop the programs.
All right, thank you. Mr. Alex?
I'm sorry, quick follow-up, Deb, to clarify your statement about if we continue to serve GIS Consortium, we'll charge them next year. Is next year fiscal year 2013 or fiscal year 2014?
13.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Quisenberry.
I say if you have a card reader, punch card reader, I might be able to help out with the RPG.
Nice.
We might be able to rustle one up. Gordy might have one still.
Mr. Carter, do you have a question?
I just don't want you to forget. I just want to mention something which supervisor assessments.
I have it written down. Okay. Mr. Kurtz.
As Mr. Betts just came over, we're both in the twilight zone here.
A little louder.
We're in the twilight zone trying to figure out what RPG and all that is. Is there any way you can talk in fourth grade language?
I thought I was. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for that compliment. RPG, Mr. Kurtz, RPG stands for Report Program Generator. It's simply a language that allows you to take the data that's stored on the system and create reports from the data.
Aren't you glad you asked?
So that's what RPG
know,
is.
Actually.
So it dates back to the days of COBOL. Kind of, are you familiar with...
Start talking in initials.
Yeah.
You know, I know there's two guys here, Mr. Quiz and Mr. Alex, who know what the heck you're talking about, but I think that at our age, my four-year-old knows better what you're talking about than I do.
My programmer tells me that RPG dates back to the days of COBOL, back in the 70s and 80s.
I remember that very well.
Back when he was deciding what he wanted to do, the programming tracks that he could choose were either COBOL or RPG. Everybody was doing COBOL, so he picked RPG.
Thank you.
Ms. Bergson, microphone, please.
I was going to say my fourth grade grandson would understand every word of it. Some of it's just 20th century.
Okay, any more questions for on IT?
All right, thank you very much.
Mr. Carter, your assessor question.
Page 18, you have supervisor of assessment, and you have the chief deputy supervisor of assessment. You have
have the appraisal and the you got the sale and the office manager. And then if you have a 33 FTP, then a fact map, map technician. Now, how in the world can you create the problem that happens? And if you go to page 20, the Illinois Department of Revenue have supervision in there. So I just couldn't see how in the world what transpired at the market did.
I'm not sure what your question is, Mr. Carter. Is that just a comment?
That created a big problem here in this.
I think he's mixing that with the Board of Review.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
There are 8 full-time equivalent positions in the Supervisor of Assessments office. There are 3 in the Board of Review.
So what I'm saying, don't they have to...
They're supposed to share, that's correct.
Will they be efforts together?
Yes.
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 That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Right.
That's just what I'm saying.
You're correct, Mr. Carter. All right. Circuit Clerk.
Okay, moving on to the Circuit Clerk. The Circuit Clerk, of all of your elected officials, has authority over the highest number of special revenue funds. Starting out with the Circuit Clerk's General Corporate Fund, you will see that she does generate a substantial amount of revenue in Circuit Clerk fees. It has been stagnant this year, and actually the projection for 2013 has been adjusted up to $1.85 million since this was printed. So it's $1,850,000 instead of just $1.8 million, which is consistent with what was actually collected in 2011, is consistent with what is projected for this year, and I believe is a reasonable estimate for next year's revenue. In expenditures, a majority of the Circuit Clerk's expense, 97% in this general corporate budget, is in personnel. And you will also see in her revenue, there is the last revenue line from the Circuit Clerk Operation Administration Fund 630, revenue in the amount of $60,000. This is a new fee that was made available to Circuit Clerks in 2010, and it generates about $150,000 in revenue a year. We'll look at it in a minute. The clerk has agreed to use it to offset general corporate fund expenditures in the amount of $60,000 a year at this point. So that is revenue there. If there aren't any questions about that, I'll go on to Circuit Clerk Support Enforcement, which is also a general corporate fund department. Mr. Alex.
Going back to our earlier discussion, their Circuit Clerk has their own IT person. Uh-huh. Where is that in the order?
Well, no, we'll get to it. It's in a special revenue fund. It's not in her general corporate fund.
And therefore, does it appear on the org chart on page 37?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
The support enforcement department budget within the general corporate fund is specifically for child support. It is a result of an intergovernmental agreement with DHFS, and it's a fairly small budget. It's basically funds one full-time person who works with child support initiatives. The court automation fund is a fund that the revenue is generated by an automation fee. Until 2 years ago, the fee was $5. The board increased it to 10. The statutory max, I believe, is 15, so it could still go up. Every $5 generates about $125,000 in revenue. This is where the court's technology position is. You'll see it in regular full-time employees. It's being moved there from temporary as of fiscal year 2013. And from this automation fund, the expenses for annual maintenance and software licensing agreements for the JANO system, for the clerks and for the court, are paid from the equipment maintenance line item, which is just about $100,000. The clerk also covers
purchasing all hardware for the courts and the clerks' operations from this fund. At this point, the budget for fiscal 13 overspends revenue, so the fund balance is projected to go from an ending position of 162,437 at the end of 11 to a negative position. It won't go negative because they won't actually use all the expenditure budget if they don't have cash in the fund to cover the expenses. But this fund has reached a point where just the maintenance of the court's technology coordinator and the ongoing annual maintenance services to JANO basically spend all the revenue that is coming in under the current fee. There are two signatories to any expenditure out of this fund. Any expenditure has to be approved both by the circuit clerk and the presiding judge. The next fund is the Child Support Service Fund. This is a fund that has a revenue fee that's paid by those who pay child support. This fund balance grew to a level of about $500,000 by the end of fiscal 2011. So in fiscal 2012, the clerk stopped charging the fee. Basically, this fund pays for two full-time positions who deal with child support services. At this current rate, the clerk is projecting spending down the fund balance by making expenditures from this fund. The Circuit Clerk Operation Administration Fund is one I told you about a few minutes earlier, projected to generate about $150,000 in annual revenue. The clerk did move her annual file folder purchase of $50,000 from her general corporate fund to this fund, and as I mentioned earlier, also has agreed to transfer $60,000 to offset expenditures of the operation of her office in the general corporate fund. This still leaves about a $40,000 balance, so this fund, which we just started receiving this revenue in fiscal 2010 towards the end, will build to a fund balance of almost $170,000 by the end of 2013. And there's a typo there on 2013, I see. Court Document Storage Fund. This is a fund that is controlled entirely by the circuit clerk. It is for document storage. It is generated through revenue of a fee of $5. This fee also could be up to at least $15. And the clerk manages dealing with the records of the courts through the use of this fund. It, too, has a fund balance that is diminishing based on the projected budgets over 2012 and 2013. There are three full-time positions that are paid for out of this fund. And finally, the one you added tonight, this is a brand new fund. It's the Circuit Clerk Electronic Ticketing Fund. It went into effect in January 2011. It's brand new. It's for electronic citations. It is to allow electronic means of getting law enforcement data to the circuit court clerk. There are really no planned expenditures at this time, and Ms. Frank, to her credit, just put a budget together for next year, but we'll leave to the next clerk any determination or decisions about how this fund may be used in the future, which makes sense, and I think the state's attorney could probably speak to this too, but there's still development, I think, that needs to be done before this electronic transfer of information, before we're entirely ready to move to that step.
Questions? Mr. Maxwell.
Going back to page 38, 361 TAM, investment interest.
A little closer to the microphone, please.
Okay. Going back to page 38, 361 TAN investment interest. That seems like quite a bit considering how low rates are now.
The circuit clerk has a collections fund through which she manages millions of dollars in transactions because she collects revenues through the court system that end up being distributed to all of the police agencies and other entities throughout the county, and the interest fees earned on that collections fund get deposited into the general corporate fund.
So it's a fairly substantial fund.
It is quite a substantial fund, but it does not show up in your budget.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Ms. Petrie.
You've explained that some of these monies from the circuit clerk go to the general fund by agreement. There's an election coming up. There will be a new individual in that office. Could you discuss the stability of these agreements?
Well, the primary one is probably the Operations and Administration Fund, and I would expect continuing cooperation. I mean, that fund is to offset the cost of operating the circuit clerk's office. So to provide relief to the general corporate fund through those revenues, I'm not aware of any significant needs that the circuit clerk's office has that would require them to hang on to those revenues for other issues. So I guess I would hope for ongoing cooperation and, you know, with regard to that for the benefit of the operation of the general fund.
Mr. Mitchell.
On the court document storage fund, the fee charged is $5, and you said it could go as high as 15.
Mm-hmm.
Is it at 10 now?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was at 5.
No. I thought it was, it's still at 5.
Could there be a recommendation that
courts automation fund was increased to 10, not document storage?
Could that fee recommend that it go to 10?
Yes, and it's up to the county board to determine whether or not that fee is increased. But typically, you, the county board, would wait for the elected official to come to you and request the increase based on their need. And I would be amazed if you don't see that sort of a request from the next clerk.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Alex.
Tim, this technology person, I don't understand what you want to talk about this later. This was, so the one FTE in the court automation project is at the cost.
That's correct. Works for the justice system. No. She has some technology responsibility assigned to one of her positions in the general corporate fund, but I believe he does other things as well.
Okay, so during the IT presentation, we talked about two individuals who do IT but aren't in the central administrative IT department.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two people?
No, county clerk has his own programmer.
County clerk. I'm sorry, I misheard. Right. I thought you said circuit clerk.
Right. No, okay, county clerk.
So this person who's in the court automation fund, do they actually report to the circuit clerk, or do they report to the chief judge, or both?
I believe by agreement, the position reports to the court administrator, that the presiding judge and the circuit clerk agreed on that.
The court administrator. Okay.
Right.
So if there were a willingness to consolidate that position with the central IT group, it would be the circuit clerk and the chief judge who would probably have to agree to that.
Yes.
Okay, because they're the signatories on the fund.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, and the circuit clerk's not going to be here tonight, right? Because I've got a question that I think maybe she could answer, but she's not here. With regard to the child support fund, the fee that they stopped charging because of the fund balance, is that because we have good child support payees in our county, or do we have any idea why, or are we not doing enforcement?
The circuit clerk, over 10 years ago, built this fund balance up because she had an interest in adding a drive-up window to the new courthouse facility for individuals who pay child support to be able to do it at a drive-up window, which is why there's a $500,000 fund balance there. With the movement to automated deposits,
people don't have to come to the courthouse anymore nearly as much as they did 10 or 15 years ago to make their child support payments. So the money's been sitting there for quite a long time, and she doesn't have a need to spend that money on her current child support operation.
Okay, so
and it's restricted.
It has to be associated with
child support.
Child support.
Right.
So if we wanted to enhance an online payment method,
right,
that it could be used for that.
Well, and one thing we've looked at, Jano does have a child support segment to the software that has not ever been utilized, but because we purchased it, you know, we've paid maintenance on it. That fund could have been making those maintenance payments. If the new clerk decides to use that module of the Jano software, certainly this fund would pay for the ongoing future maintenance of it.
Or training on it or
right,
things like that.
Right.
Okay. Another question. I know the circuit clerk occasionally delivers documents in varying degrees to the Urbana Free Library for archiving. Is that, and I also know the Urbana Free Library receives money from the county, a specified payment, not a based on document payment. Does that payment come out of the circuit clerk's budget, or is the county paying that?
You are paying that out of the general county budget, and that is something that the circuit clerk has not been interested in doing with court document storage, but I do believe it would be a very appropriate thing to do with court document storage, because the Urbana Library Archive is taking on a substantial burden in their operation by doing that on behalf of the county.
Yeah, I think it would be important, particularly if there may be room in the fee levels in some of these areas, to be forward-thinking and charged to take care of those documents.
Exactly.
Once their life has been run. But I do know that at times, I'll use the word dump, the circuit clerk has dumped a large amount of documents on the Urbana Free Library, and without any support for processing them in any way, and I would hope to see that actually start to be taken up by the circuit clerk.
I hope so too.
Ms. Michaels.
A question here. Looking at the indicators and the balances, the fund balances, it looks like we have several funds that she has target amounts that we're going to be way under on, like the automation fund. The target amount that's listed on here is 150, and you know, even though it might not go negative, it'd be something different. The child support service is down 105,000. We get 30 on the operations, but then we're down another 100,000 on the document storage. It sounds like she's taking some of her balances that she already has to try to make her budget work, but yet there's a big increase in the first one, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, it just...
There's a big increase in what?
It looks... Well, let's see. Hold on. And then on page... No, it's the same. It's the same. The indicator's the same on that. The projected in budget on 42 is up 400,000. So I didn't know if she was shifting money from these other funds into her general fund.
No, you would see it in the general fund. She cannot move money from one fund to the other.
Okay. Well, it looks like there's several funds that are targeted for like 210 and 150, and they're going to be way under what the targeted amount is.
That the
is.
Fund balance goal is higher than what it
way
will
higher.
End up being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe that that's true. In some instances, that could be a result of budgeting more than she thinks will actually be spent in 2013. And in some instances, it could just be that they're reaching a point where the revenue is not keeping pace with the expenditures that are being made from the fund.
Okay. And then my last question is, in the beginning, it says that there are, I counted up 37 and a half people on page 37, and it's saying the full-time history is 30 and a half, so it's off about seven people. So I didn't know.
No,
that
because those other seven are in the other fund departments.
Okay, so it really is.
Her organization chart shows all of her staff, including those. There's
okay.
One in the support enforcement budget. There's three in courts document storage. So
everybody but the IT person is in that front page.
Yes.
Okay, that was my question. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. James.
I was just going to comment when you were talking about the child support issue. In her synopsis there, she did state that a lot of it now is going through the state disbursement unit, which I commend her for not collecting that fee and helping those poor gentlemen and ladies that have to pay that.
Mr. Quisby, another question?
Yeah, sorry, I forgot one I wrote down. The e-ticket item, is that... I'm kind of curious why that wasn't just made a part of automation. Was that a separate fund required by statute?
Yeah, there is a separate statute setting up that fee that needs to be deposited in a fund to be used specifically for e-ticketing citations.
Okay, it just seems like it's automation of some sort. So
that's the legislature.
Are there any other questions? Oh. Okay, continue.
All right, the circuit court budget begins. This budget, too, is very much a status quo budget for the most part. You'll note that the circuit court has no revenue. Their expenditures right now, 54% of the budget is in personnel. One of the changes that they've made in fiscal 2013, if you look at 53303 attorney legal services, you'll see that they've budgeted about $75,000 historically. They're expecting a large spike in that this year in 2012, and that's a result of having to appoint special attorneys for a number of cases. So to help offset that in 2013, if you look on the next page, 53474 contract attorneys, that is going up by $18,000, which they've basically taken from the attorney legal services line item to add another contract attorney because they believe they get more coverage at a better dollar value when they have a contract with attorneys, so they're adding an additional one next year. And that's really the only change in their expenditures that is of any substance. The jury commission is also a general corporate fund department. It's very small. It's the three part-time jury commissioners who sit before juries and excuse jurors if they request to be excused. And then the law library fund is also under the control of the presiding judge, and law library fees remain fairly stable at about $68,000. The courts have purposefully added some expenditures to this budget over the last couple of years to try and help out the general corporate fund with some of the shortfalls that general corporate was facing and will be, I believe, phasing back. They have already started phasing back some of those expenditures over the next couple of years so that they get it back to a balanced budget. But they had a sufficient fund balance to allow them to do that for a couple of years. The fund balance goal is really $20,000, and they're still above that at the end of 2013, even with a revenue deficit on the budget.
Questions? We'll go on to public defender.
The public defender revenue comes primarily from reimbursement of 66% of the public defender's salary and then court fees that are assessed by the judiciary for services provided by the public defender to their clients. Expenditures, 98% personnel costs for the public defender, and their non-personnel costs are basically being held with one increase, and that is in dues and licensing because of an increase by the Illinois Supreme Court for the attorney licenses. So they increased that line item by that amount. Their staffing, you will see, was at 18 in 2009, and they did lose one position when we went through the cuts in 2010 and 2011, and that was a legal secretary. They do have a program change request, if you turn to the end of their section. They are requesting the addition of a part-time investigator in 2013. And they are requesting the addition of a part-time social worker by 2015 and the reinstatement of the legal secretary starting in 2014 and then full in 2015. Those are all personnel requests that they have for their operation.
Questions?
Hi, Deb. So we've heard countless times people come up and talk about how the public defender's office is so understaffed and we have such a huge backlog. It doesn't seem to be reflected in this budget document. Can you kind of give any clarity as to do they feel they're overburdened heavily at this point?
Did the state's attorney leave?
She's in the hallway. She just stepped out.
You know, when people quote to you ABA standards for you know, the number of cases you should carry, the only thing I can tell you is the public defender has a much heavier burden than that recommendation, and so does the state's attorney. So basically, the criminal justice system in Champaign County keeps moving cases. There is no increase in backlog, and, you know, it seems to be operating fairly efficiently. I'm sure that all of the attorneys in both offices have heavy workloads and work very hard. Beyond that, I think you'd probably need to talk to either the public defender or the state's attorney to get more than that.
Thought I'd ask. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Petrie.
This is the second program change request we've had this evening, and we haven't had much discussion on how we might possibly, as a county board, find the funding to
work. Well, you're getting a little ahead of yourselves. What we're doing right now is presenting all the information to you. You get to decision-making later in this process, and even by the end of this evening, you're going to have a better idea of where you're positioned with the general corporate fund, but decision-making would be basically that we expect that at the September finance meeting.
Questions? All right. Sheriff.
Okay. The sheriff's budget. Basically, his revenue is remaining fairly stable. You will see an increase in the revenue from the Village of Savoy because the sheriff has negotiated a contract with Savoy and with local governments that reflects a cost of living increase in the services that we provide to those entities for law enforcement services. So that's where that increase comes into play. At the same time, sheriff's fees are also looked to be increasing this year, and he has budgeted more than had been budgeted at the beginning of 2012 for those fees as well in fiscal 2013.
Are sheriff fees like football games, et cetera?
Or fees on criminal justice cases that are decided. Football games are reimbursements. That wouldn't be a sheriff's fee. That would be local government reimbursement. On the expenditure side, the sheriff in this budget has two line item justifications where he is increasing his line items. The first and the most significant is in METCAD, what we pay to METCAD for the services they provide to the sheriff's office. METCAD had gone for a period of approximately 4 years with no increases and was no longer able to continue doing that with the budget that they adopted that went into effect on July 1st, 2012. So there is a METCAD fee increase of 18% for that budget and another anticipated METCAD fee increase of 17% for 2013. And that is the basis for the increase of about $70,000 in that line item, which is on page 76, about a third of the way down. The sheriff also makes a contribution to the Metro SWAT team, and that is an increase that is reflected in the contributions and grants line item. The sheriff's law enforcement budget is 84% personnel costs. We did maintain $80,000 for vehicles.
Is that two?
It should be four. Well, three or four. There was a time when the sheriff's annual budget for vehicles was $200,000. That's ideally what it should be. He should be able to replace at least 8 to 10 vehicles a year. So it's still far under what it should be, but at least there is a budget for him to continue. And you will see this year his total projected budget for vehicles is $115,000. He found some money from other lines that he projected savings in so that he could purchase additional vehicles this year as well. On the correctional center budget, you'll notice that on electronic home detention programming, it's on page 80, 341.14. The actual revenue in 2011 was 146. It was originally budgeted at 180 this year, and then the sheriff went through a period where he was able to put fewer people on that program. He's projecting $165,000 in revenue from that program, which is more higher utilization than what occurred in 2011, because I believe the ability to use that program has been effectively reinstated so that he is using it as much as he can. On the expenditure side, he has three lines where there are increases. The first is in overtime for corrections. That line item has been budgeted at $185,576 for at least the last 5 years as a beginning budget amount. It has never been adequate. It has not been adjusted for wage increases that the employees who are paid out of that overtime line item have received over the years. So the sheriff and I agreed that using a five-year average of what he has spent in overtime would be realistic. So it's budgeted with about a $40,000 increase in fiscal 2013, bringing it up to $225,585. The sheriff and his staff work very, very hard to manage this corrections overtime. There was a time when it was in excess of $400,000 before Sheriff Walsh was sheriff. So this seemed like a very reasonable increase to include in his budget. He also had to increase the stocked drugs line item because there's just a higher need for that expenditure in the correctional center budgets, and there was a contractual increase for the medical mental health contracts, and that is also reflected in his expenditure lines. Going on to the drug forfeitures fund, it nets, he projects annual forfeitures, cease forfeitures of approximately $20,000. He only spends it if he gets it. You can kind of see in 2011, we didn't get it, but he spent some money that had been built up previously. Based on the projected budget, he will maintain about a $50,000 fund balance in the expended drug forfeitures fund. Jail commissary. This is a fund where there has been a fund balance that has built up over the past several years, and I believe the sheriff has a project in mind for fiscal 2013, which will improve the ability of inmates to have access to friends and family outside through a in-house video system that can be accessed over the computer, and that's something that he's working on, and that is the big expenditure line that he has budgeted in this budget for fiscal 2013. You'll see he has $207,400 budgeted in furnishings and office equipment. And County Jail Medical Cost Fund, basically what revenues are collected there, the sheriff transfers back to the general corporate corrections budget to offset the medical and drug costs that that budget absorbs.
Questions? Mr. Alex.
Is there a MCAD board?
Yes.
Does the county board have a representative on that, or does the sheriff have a representative on that?
The sheriff is on it, and the county administrator is on it.
Okay. And Main Street jail repair and maintenance, zero.
Right. It's budgeted in the physical plant budget.
Yes.
It must be that at one point there was...
It was there.
It was there for some reason.
Thank you. That was my hope.
Yeah.
Ms. Petrie, do you have a question?
Yes, I noticed there's $20,000 for education. Does that cover all the employees, or is it targeted solely at the sheriff, or what?
It's to train. Which budget are you looking at?
Sorry, I should have referenced that. Page 81, last line.
Yeah, that is for new correctional officer training, which the sheriff
all
provides.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? State's attorney. Step with the break. What she needs.
Hello. Hello. Good evening. So I have five budgets that you should have. The first one being the general state's attorney budget 080041. The second one being the support enforcement budget 080141. The drug asset forfeiture budget 621041. The victim advocacy grant 675041. And a new fund, which is the state's attorney automation fund 633041. So I suppose I'll start with that. That's a new fund that was created based on a new statute that went into effect June 1 of this year that basically provides for $2 out of fees collected in criminal cases for state's attorneys to automate their offices. And so it's just beginning to be collected at this time, and I don't have, we'll see how much actually gets collected and then determine how best to use that once there actually starts to be a balance in that fund. But I work with the IT department as well as our criminal justice department IT professional to determine what will be the best way to use that money once it starts being collected. Similarly, easy to talk about, the victim advocacy grant. This is a fund for our grant that we receive. It's a federal grant, and so it has to be a separate fund, is my understanding. I would prefer it to be part of my general fund, but it's a separate because of the federal nature of the funding. It's pretty steady. Basically, it pays for part of the salary of one of my victim advocates. It doesn't fully fund that position because that individual on that grant has been with the county for going on 30 years at this point, and the grant does not increase. It's stayed pretty static over the years. But basically, that's the purpose of that particular grant. Asset forfeitures, that is a fund that covers the portion of money that we receive in with regards to drug asset forfeitures. So when law enforcement makes an arrest that involves the sale of illegal drugs, if they seize property or money in the course of those arrests, then we work with them to complete the forfeiture process, and we get a percentage of that of those funds or of the funds that are received from the sale of property based on the statute and depending on the circumstances. And so generally that fund, the balance and the money that comes into that fund depends on the work of local law enforcement, and we work very closely with our law enforcement agencies to make sure that we are taking advantage of forfeiture opportunities through money, property, even homes when it's appropriate under the statute depending on the circumstances. And we use that money by statute. We can only use it to further drug prosecutions, and so we use it generally for training for our prosecutors, for resources specifically focused on prosecution of drug offenses. We've used it to purchase equipment such as TVs, video monitors, computers, that sort of thing. We use it to pay for a phone for a prosecutor who works closely with the drug units in the local law enforcement agencies, that sort of thing. And we also are I have increased. One of my paralegals who works directly with the drug asset forfeitures as well. And so that's basically the money where that's all coming from. Moving backwards again, the support enforcement budget. We have and have had for many years a contract with the Department of the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services to prosecute or represent the state in child support enforcement matters. And so the entire funding for that department generally comes from the state. Now, over the past couple of years, because of the issues that the state has had financially, we have had to cut that budget significantly this past year. And that budget is based on the state budget year, which is not the same as the county budget year, and so we've already had to go through that process with the state and make the appropriate cuts. That resulted in us losing one position from that budget. We had an investigator, but due to cutting requirements from the state, we ended up having to lay that individual off. Two of the employees who work in that department, the paralegal and the legal secretary, are only partially paid out of that budget. And again, part of that is because of budget cuts. I've had to get a little bit creative there. And so the paralegal, who is 0.75 in the support enforcement budget, also does paralegal work for the civil attorneys. And similarly, the secretary receptionist, who's 0.8 in the support enforcement budget, also answers the phone for the civil attorneys when they're here in Brookins. And so that was the basis for those part-time type positions. But basically, that entire division is funded from the contract that we have with the state. We are planning on moving that division over to the courthouse. It is currently located here in the Brookins building. However, as you're aware, the Park District is interested in that space, and I'm interested in having my entire office in one building as opposed to separated. And so we're working on that move, and I think that's going to be a very good thing for us. However, it will eliminate some of the need to have those separations as far as the staff is concerned, and so I'll have to figure that out in the budget as we move along. And then to the general budget, essentially it's a static budget from the past years as requirements have been created in as far as making budget cuts. I have maintained a pretty static budget over the past couple of years. The only increase is the wage increase that you all have agreed upon as appropriate for bargaining unit or non-bargaining unit employees, as well as the contractual wage raise for my bargaining unit employees. Other than that, it's a very static budget, pretty similar to past years. So I'm happy to answer any questions you have. Yes, sir.
Question, I'm having a little trouble with the victim advocacy grant versus the core mission. Is the victim advocacy program director who's mentioned in the victim advocacy grant, is that the person in the victim witness services box in the main org chart? If I understand, whether it's two people or one person.
Well, this grant just covers one person.
Okay.
I have more than one victim advocates.
Looks like it covers 80% of a person.
Right.
Okay. Who is that person? Is that the person who's in charge, who directs victim witness services in the office, or is it a different person?
Well, I guess I would say that's not really a person in the victim witness services box. That's just victim witness services.
Okay.
And the people are actually the people under that.
Okay, so this victim advocacy program director would be one of the victim witness advocates.
Right. And that's just the title that's in that grant.
I see. So these five.
They're all. Right.
So the five boxes with double lines around them aren't actually people?
Right.
Okay, that's...
Well, I guess except for the executive assistant to the state's attorney, so...
So is the... Do the contacts listed on page 105, and it's about 2,500 contacts related to victim support, are those all... Is that only those that are funded out of this grant? So you're doing basically 2,500... victim contacts for $36,000 a year?
Well, you know, some of this is sort of...
It's true. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah. Well, because they work very hard. And these are also the people who were cut back for the past couple of years, who I have not been able to get back to full-time, although I'm hoping that I will be able to based on some retirements that are occurring or have occurred.
That essentially just allows you to serve more people than you would be able to serve. It's a function that
right.
You would do anyway, but it allows you to have additional contacts.
Well, there are requirements under Illinois statute as far as what state's attorney's offices have to do with regards to victims. And those requirements are based on the types of cases and the types of victims as well. So we are by statute and law required to provide victim services to victims of forcible felonies and to a certain variety of victims. And then there's certain things that we are required to do. We go beyond that. We provide victim services to all victims. So, for example, under the statute, we are not required to provide victim services to victims in cases involving property loss only. We don't have to do that, but we do. We do provide them with notice about charges that were filed. We provide them with the opportunity to seek restitution. We provide them with ongoing support and information during the course of the case, but we're not required to do that.
So that grant essentially allows you to do that, to broaden the...
Well, the grant covers what we're required by law to do as far as providing victim services to victims of violent crimes and to certain notifications, and then the other people are able to cover the things we're not required by law to do.
Okay, and sorry, if I can have a follow-up. Also under victim witness services, there's a senior state's attorney investigator.
Yes.
Is that the position that you indicated was eliminated?
No. That was in the child support enforcement budget.
Okay.
And it's not on the org chart anymore because it was eliminated.
Thank you.
Other questions? Ms. Cohen.
Yeah, could you explain what the non-employee training is?
Where are you at?
Page number.
On page 92, 533-18.
It's at zero.
Yeah, that's all zeroed out, so.
I don't know what that was for. It's been zero forever.
Yeah. As I explained earlier, whatever
it's
we had.
It's probably been there since 1970.
It may have been in there once, and we can't take out that line. We're stuck it forever. Mr. Mitchell.
You talked about federal grants. What happens if, and also maybe this goes to the state, and maybe this is a more general question for all federal monies that would be coming here. What happens if it is drastically cut?
Well, then either I have to find a way to keep that person or I have to lay that person off.
Is that, I mean, are we talking about that? Because, you know, it could be a possibility down the road.
Well, at this point, it seems that particular grant has been very steady over the years. We've had that for...
Over 20, 25 years.
Yeah. Now, it hasn't grown any. I mean, generally, it's the same every year. And, of course, that's not... I suppose that theoretically I could keep that person at the same salary, but she's been with the county for 30 years. And so her salary increases, although the grant doesn't increase. We have another grant that is shown as revenue in the general budget because it's a state grant with the Attorney General's office. And that one, similarly, we've had for quite a while, and it covers another victim advocate. But it similarly does not cover her entire salary and doesn't really grow. And actually, that one is more the one that's at risk of being cut or lost over the years. So basically, we have to reapply for them every year.
Any other questions? Thanks very much.
You are welcome.
Coroner.
Good evening. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So was out of order, that's out of order.
Well, he's been waiting all night for that.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. I'm going to, unless anybody has any questions, I mean, you've got my report on page 108, is my... the staffing in my office, which is pretty consistent year after year. The one thing it doesn't reflect, I do have some what I call part-time employees, but they're temporary. They're basically at will. They come in when we need them. When we don't need them, they're not there, and that's paid out of a part-time budget, but they're not actually positions in my office that are on the position roster or whatever you want to call it. They're just part-timers that we bring in. Of course, the budget highlights, as you all are aware, thanks to you, we have a new facility that opened up a year ago last May. New morgue, it's working out great. We've been doing autopsies there since last November. That's helped out immensely with our operations and our staffing issues. I'll jump into the budget here as far as the numbers go, and I'm going to go, basically the numbers reflect the same. The difference in the numbers from my budget from last year, if you go to page 113, I can go over the differences in the budget, and the only thing that's not on page 113 that's different in my budget is we added the stipend that you talked about earlier. I'm one of the elected officials that gets a stipend. Generally speaking, in the past, we haven't budgeted for that in my office. We've done it once or twice, but we haven't done it consistently because we don't always get it. The elected officials don't always get it. We don't know when we're going to get it, if we're going to get it. We don't know how much it's going to be. The gross amount is $6,500, but we've had one year where it was, I think, $2,600 or something. This year was split into two payments. We got the first one. We didn't think we were going to get the second one, so we really don't know. But, again, every time we get those, if we don't budget for those up front, it requires a budget amendment, more paperwork, come before the board to receive it and spend it, so to speak. So we go ahead and budget that in, but as Deb stated earlier, that's revenue neutral because we only spend it if we get it. There was an increase for the employees, which was my employees are under the two of my three full-time employees are under the AFSCME contract, so they got an increase there. And then the rest of the changes in my budget are on the line item justification. And as you can see, if you're on page 113, gas and oil, I reduced that after we opened up the morgue from prior year with the thought that we weren't going to be traveling back and forth to another county as often or at all, actually. And I was a little off on, I reduced it from a little over $9,700 to $7,500, and it looks like I'm going to be coming in about $8,265. That's difficult for me to determine with the fluctuation in gas prices as well. I've estimated it at that time, and as I saw this morning, gas prices went up like 30 cents or something. So I have no idea. That's just an estimate, but it looks like consistency-wise, I'm probably going to be about 1,000, but honestly, depending on where these fuel prices go and what happens, I couldn't tell you for sure. Under equipment less than 1,000, that's a grant. Like the stipend, there's no guarantee. That's collected. Every death certificate that's purchased in Illinois, there's a $2 fee on there, and that's split four ways. Part of it goes to administer the state's online database program for death certificates. Part of it's supposed to be used for training purposes, and part of it's supposed to go to each individual coroner's office in a grant. You know, we were told at different times we'd get $4,600, $4,000. It's like the stipend. Some we might have got $1,500 one year. One year we might not have got anything because they said the priority was the death certificate program has to be maintained, obviously. So if they need to upgrade or work on it, all the money's going to be shifted there. But what we did, and again, just like the others, that's a revenue neutral. We have to receive the grant to spend it, but it hasn't been in my budget before. Usually we would come after the fact and ask for a budget amendment. Operational supplies is where I've got an increase. That's just something that, unfortunately, I get caught in catch-22 sometimes where we put off purchases from one year to the next. Sometimes we buy a year's worth of something at one time, and I've estimated that next year I'm going to have to make another purchase of body bags. Unfortunately, we use a standard body bag that I can price shop for, and I get a pretty good deal on it, but it can't be used on every case, and we're running into a situation pretty consistently where some of the calls we go out on require a larger bag, and I get those in a case of 5 versus a case of 15 because of their size and their thickness and the requirement. So that actually runs into an extra expense for us, and I've estimated between that and folders and things that we use on a yearly basis that we haven't budgeted for, that aren't budgeted every year annually, I'm estimating I'm going to come up about that short for next year. When I make a regular body bag purchase, it's easily over $2,000 just for that one purchase, and I usually have to make 2 a year. I'm hoping I can get by with one next year, but it'll depend on our caseload as well. Laboratory fees, I've put the increase in there because when I met with Deb too, the goal is to try and get our line items consistent as close as we can estimate or as best we can estimate. And consistently year after year, we've underfunded that line item. What we've said we needed in the beginning of the year has always been way lower than what we needed at the end. So I've tried to bring it in line. You can see it's typically been budgeted in the around 22,000 range, and we've come up short. You can see fiscal year 2011 was 31,290. We started this year with 27, so you can see I already started lower. I try and take averages from prior years, but unfortunately I'm always coming up low and have to transfer money in there or go for a budget amendment to cover the costs. And unfortunately I have two things that are the two major expenses in my office are employees and autopsies and lab fees. And I don't control any of those, I guess, basically. The lab fees, you know, even if my budget isn't increased each year, the lab says this is what this test is going to cost you this year, and we've argued it out. Luckily, I've been able to work with other coroner's offices in the state. There's multiple labs we can use, but we've gone together as a group and unofficially gotten an agreement with the lab that several of us use to provide us all the best price and the same price. So usually when they go to raise the fee on us, I call several of the other coroners and say, hey, we need to put some pressure on, see if we can stop this or lower it. We were able to do that a little bit this year and get them to not go as high as they originally said, but it was kind of a package agreement for us. Waste disposal and recycling, that's something I've always had. We have biohazardous materials we have to dispose of. When we did open the morgue, though, we ran into a situation where we've seen an increase in that because of some of our items we're using in the morgue, and that's reflected in 2011. I spent $1,700. That wasn't the morgue because the actual autopsy part of the morgue we didn't open until November of 2011, so we only had a month there. I had already budgeted $1,200 for that year. I'm estimating that I'm going to be about $4,100. So I'm requesting $3,600 as an increase because looking at what we're doing, we had a situation where we did a couple cases where we used more biohazard material than we normally would. And I've also worked with, which I'll get into, some other agencies that are helping to contribute to that. Likewise, the next line down, laundry and cleaning, is something we never had before, and based off of what we've spent this year, I'm estimating that's it. With the autopsy suite, we have towels and rags that are used that we reuse, but they have to be laundered first, and they can't just go to any laundry or whatever because they have biohazards on them and so forth. So that's about what it's running us so far, and I think we can get it done for that next year based off of what we've been doing since November. Indigent burial is another one of those funds. The indigent burial fund, we used to budget about $500 a year several years ago, and I would get 1 to 2 of those cases a year. If anybody's heard about or over the last couple, 3 years, the state basically has kind of flip-flopped back and forth about whether they're going to reimburse funeral homes or families for public aid burials. So what's happened is basically in Champaign County and several of the other counties, funeral homes have refused to take these cases anymore. They used to come out. The funeral homes would, if we called them, said, hey, there's been a death, they'll come out and get that person, and they could bill the state, if it was an indigent person, for reimbursement under public aid up to a certain amount. The problem is when the state stopped paying and it was taking 9-10 months to get paid, and then they come out and said, we don't have any money left to pay it, the funeral homes basically said, we're private business, we're not banks, you know, we're not going to float that anymore and know if we're going to get paid. So they stepped back. Fortunately, I've been able to, you can see the estimate there. We've done, I believe, over 10 of them this year. In certain occasions, I'm able to get a cremation done, which is cheaper than a burial. In certain cases, I've been able to recoup some of the expenses, but we haven't budgeted for them because that's not something that's in my line item. So if I get reimbursed for any of those fees, it just actually has gone in the general fund, and I've either had to file for a budget amendment to get it back because I've spent it out of my budget, but we hadn't budgeted for it. So what I'd like to do is, just on estimates of what we've done so far this year, is just budget for it next year because we're seeing more and more of them. Like I said, I'm doing one to two. I used to do one to two a year. I've done over 10 this year. We had one just over the weekend that was, they were actually under the state guardian's office. This person was a ward of the state, and the nursing home called us and told us they passed away, and the guardian's office told the nursing home to call us. And I went round and round for 2 hours on the phone with the guardian's office, and I was able to get it taken care of. But then I talked to their attorney yesterday morning, and he and I seemed to disagree, you know, who's really responsible, and we're still working on that. And what it comes down to many times, you know, it's unclear in the law, but many times when they're indigent or unclaimed, it ends up falling to the county coroner to take care of it, and we can't leave these people, you know, without doing something with them, and it's kind of a time-sensitive issue. So, again, that's where, you know, I just like to budget what I realistically feel like we're going to make. There are situations. We had a prisoner recently out of Lawrence Correctional Center who died here of natural causes, but he was unclaimed by his family, and we were able to work with the prison. He had a trust fund in the prison that had a few hundred dollars in it, and we were able, well, I sent them a bill because they agreed to send us the money out of the account to pay for the cremation. I haven't received the check yet, but I'm under the impression they are sending it to us. So there are certain circumstances I can work with these people or agencies to try and recoup some of our expenses, but this just helps reflect the true expenses that we're experiencing in the office. Those are the changes. Everything else is pretty much the same. Are there any questions about what I went over so far, or any of the?
Oh, well, yes. I always got a question for you. Yeah. Have you got a policy then? Because I heard you say sometimes you bury them, sometimes you cremate them. It would make sense to me that you have a standard policy that if you have a burial or an indigent like that, that the policy is that, you know, you just cremate due to cost and other factors.
It's a unique situation. We don't have any written policy. My personal policy is I cremate whenever I can. The problem we run into, if I have family members and they're just not claimed, and because under the law there's no requirement, if a person lives by themselves, has, you know, they're on public aid or whatever, and they die, there's no requirement for any family members that we may find or locate to step in and pay for anything. So if I do locate family members, I usually work with them to try and get them to cremate if at all possible. And the law was changed within the last few years allowing us to do it. There were two separate laws that were on the books, and they kind of conflicted each other whether we had to bury or we had to cremate. Now it basically gives the coroner the option. The problem is, none of the coroners in the state really want to go down the road, usually, that if we don't have any family members, that we cremate and just hope that that's not against their wishes, and when they come forward several years later, they want to sue the county because their loved one, you know, a burial is one thing. If you bury, you can actually disinter, bring that person up. They can be cremated. They can be moved to a different cemetery. Once you've cremated, it's final. They can't get them back after that. So if we can't locate any family members at all, it's kind of a tight situation. Under the law, we do have the authority to do it now. It's one of those things where it's kind of touchy, and I can tell you that every one of the cases this year that we didn't have family, we found family. It might have been a third cousin twice removed or whatever, but we found somebody who was willing to step in and at least sign the paperwork and say that it was okay.
One follow-up, too, if I might find. I always ask about this, but I know, like, you got a new van not too long ago, sideboards and running lights.
And what? A bow stereo.
I don't see any capital improvement most places. I'm sure Deb's going to have an answer, but to me, if you're running that business and you know that van has a life of 7 years, that maybe, and I know I'm going to get an answer here, but I'm going to ask it anyway, it would make sense to me running a department that I would have some set-aside funds or be planning for a capital improvement from time to time, especially with the way you seem to be tearing stuff.
I can answer that. We do have the replacement fund. It's not in here. We actually did put off a van another year or two in the fund that I was doing this year or next year. We have replaced some. We just replaced one last year. And our hope is that because we're not traveling back and forth to another county now as well, that we can extend them a little longer. And we have traditionally extended them a little longer than they were really budgeted for. But so that was the case. We're not due. I think we were due to maybe replace one next year, but we pushed it back another year and everything. And that should be fine. And so that's a good question. So, yes.
Yes, Mike, can you show me in your budget where the cost savings on the equipment that we approved last November is? Because I don't see any cost savings. That I was under the impression we were going to have a lot of cost savings.
Right. Well, we do have. Right. The autopsy table was actually that we put in, that was actually covered in last year's budget. We actually, the savings that we had, that was covered, and it was paid out of last year's budget. And we do have some savings, but the problem I'm running into, again, is we have the pathologist, which I mentioned, I don't control those fees, and every year their fee goes up. And that's where when I get the fee goes up at least $6,000, and that's something like this year. And I went back and figured that up here several weeks ago, or a couple months ago, because I thought, you know, that seems like a high fee based on a normal salary. But when I figured it up on what they already make, it came in at like 4% on that. But every time that we have a new year, their fee goes up that they charge to do an autopsy and to do the toxicology, as I mentioned. So my budget's actually still going up. We're just trying to absorb that in there, and that's what's happened in this one. We are actually saving some money, but it's being absorbed by the other increases that we can't do, or that we don't have any control over. So, but we're actually seeing some efficiencies also, because we don't have people spending 2 hours for every autopsy on the road too, which has helped us out as well.
Mr. Mitchell.
Do you have any latitude on the fees that you charge?
We do. We actually, some fees I do, some I don't. Most of my fees are set by statute, and they were actually raised back, I believe, in 2010 under statute. They hadn't been raised in over 10 years, 20 years, something like that. They actually went up substantially, and we have been collecting those additional fees. I don't have any control over, and those are over like reports, like an autopsy report, photographs, toxicology reports. When attorneys, insurance companies, family members purchase those reports, when a case is over, there's a fee. And luckily for us, the FOIA statutes don't supersede those fees, because most of our reports are under 50 pages, and if they were susceptible to FOIA, they would be free. But they have to still pay those fees, so we still collect those fees. We actually, since we opened up the morgue, we are actually doing cases for other counties as well, and we charge a fee to them, and that's something we have some flexibility in. The only problem is my flexibility only goes so far as what other counties are charging, because if they're traveling to us and we're too high, they choose to go to another county. But we're actually currently providing the autopsy facility for Moultrie County, Coles County, Effingham County, Douglas County, Moultrie, Coles, Effingham, Douglas. Not those. So we're providing, I think those are the only four right now that we're providing. So whenever they need an autopsy done, they actually bring the body to our facility, and our pathologist does it for them, and I bill that county a fee for using our facility. And those are actually reflected in the fees too. Our fees that we are collecting have actually more than doubled over the last 2 to 3 years, partly because they originally doubled or increased because of the statutory fee increase. And then once we opened up our facility, we've only been open for autopsies since November 1st, and really counties have only been coming in probably since mid-December, a few of them, and then we picked up a couple more. So in that time, we've brought in or almost doubled that fee amount again just in what they're bringing in. We also, organ and tissue procurement agencies, when a person dies, a lot of times tendons, bone, tissue that can be used, skin grafts and things like that for burn victims, they can collect those, but there's a time limit they have to get to them, and they're able to do that in our facility as well, and we charge the fee to them as well. And so that's helped us especially when a lot of times the body is already in our facility. They come and do it at our facility, and we're able to charge them a fee for that.
If you could maximize those fees, that would be great. And then also, how much time are you spending doing autopsies, and do you have time to do more?
I have a pathologist that does the autopsies. That's required to be a pathologist, and their autopsy, a standard autopsy, natural causes, usually takes an hour and a half to 2 hours. If it's a gunshot or a stabbing victim or something like that, it can take longer, upwards of 30 minutes per wound. So it depends. If it's a fire victim or a body that's badly charred, it can take longer. We have to do x-rays, so forth. That can take a lot longer. The maximum they can usually do in a day, and we're talking probably a 12 or 15-hour day, is about 7 cases. And they don't normally do that, usually 2 to 4 in a day. There is potential to... I've let all the counties know our doors are open to other counties. Vermilion County, Piatt County, some of our closer neighboring counties know they have the option. They just haven't chose to come here, and that's the coroner's decision there as far as where they're doing their autopsies. It's possible that may change down the road, and we're always available to accommodate them if they so choose.
Thanks.
Yes.
Ms. Petrick?
Thank you. I have several clarification questions. I'm on page 109, and are the fees you were just talking about the 341.41 and the 341.42?
Yes.
Okay. And then down at the bottom of the page, 533.6, this medical and dental?
Yes.
Could you...
The medical, dental, mental health, that's my autopsy line item, and that's where I pay the autopsies, the autopsy assistant, and many of the fees that are associated with the autopsies come out of that line item. And then that's my biggest line item other than salaries, and the third one would be the lab fees, because we actually budget the lab fees separately so we can keep that separate out of the autopsy fee.
Okay, and my last one is conferences and training. It went from $1,000 up to $4,000. Is there a reason for that?
Which line item is it?
It's 533.95.
It was actually budgeted at $4,000 this year as well.
Yes.
It was $1,000 fiscal 2011.
It's normally budgeted about $1,000 because I have a statutory requirement that I have to get a minimum of 24 hours a year in as being coroner. And unfortunately, that's almost impossible. Nobody does it in 1 week. They do it in multiple locations because most of us can't even be away from the office for a full week. So it usually means 2 different conferences to try and accumulate the 24 hours. And most of that's what that comes out of, because by the time you have to be there overnight, it includes hotel, and meals and things like that, and a conference fee as well. Yeah.
Mr. Langenheim.
Yes. You spoke of some of your difficulties in dealing with the getting next of kin and so on for cremation and burial and so on. You also spoke of collecting fees for organs donors. Are there any legal ramifications with that?
No, that's standard practice. The only fees we collect, it's not actually organs themselves. It's the facility fee, and the agencies that procure those organs and tissue and things like that also do them in the hospitals, and they pay the hospitals usually a fee for that as well.
You do not have to clear with the descendants of that?
No, those are paid by the agencies who are procuring the organs or the tissue. They actually pay the fee for the use of the facility.
What about permission to do it?
Oh, yes. The agencies themselves have to get permission from the families to do the... Well, they do unless they're on first-person consent. If they sign their driver's license under first-person consent, technically the organ and tissue agencies can take their tissue and organs without family permission. They claim they won't do that, and I haven't seen them do it yet.
You're not involved.
No, I don't get that permission. They call me and say, hey, we have consent from the family. They provide me with a signed consent form, and I say, fine, you can come use my facility. So, yeah. I don't have to get permission for that.
I'm sorry, to follow up on Ms. Petrie's question, 341.42 is reimbursement of coroner's costs, and 345.36 is out-of-county coroner fee.
Yes. this. Those have changed around the last couple of years because there was that statute, there was a new statute that passed that changed some of the fee structure and the death certificate money. That statute changed and said it was supposed to go into a special fund for the coroner's office. And so what I did is I wanted to separate those out so I could tell at different times what came from actually reimbursement costs versus what was coming from like death certificate money, things like that. So they're separated out.
So the 345.36, the out-of-county coroner fee looks like it hasn't been used. It was projected for 2012, but it's zeroed out and then projected.
That is moved into the line item above it.
Okay, that's what I'm
saying. That's what we did. We moved it around, yes. So
that $19,000, that's the money that we're receiving from other counties for you, for doing autopsies here.
Yes, reimbursement. That includes money, like I said, like for the prisons, if that was reimbursement for a cremation. That's all. We consider that reimbursement of coroner's costs as well as the fees that we're collecting. So that's
so Mr. Rosales' question about where are you showing the savings that we've realized by doing autopsies in-house? I mean, you're realizing revenue there, and that's what we're getting by doing other by doing it for other counties. I'm not. Can you go over again? I'm sorry. Where are there line? Are there expense lines that we should see lower from 2011 to 2012 because we're able to do autopsies in-house now?
The one would be fuel, just to start out, just as a small. And fuel should have been lower because we're not making as many trips. And, again, it's fluctuating. It is a little lower, but not as low as I had estimated it would be. And then the medical, dental, mental health, the 5336, our autopsy line item, should be lower. And it actually is. If you look at the left column, the 2011 column, it was 145,954. Then when I budgeted for it in 2012, I budgeted 139,200. We reduced it down to there, and that's what I projected. We're still going to spend, and that's what I'm projecting for next year. Even though I'm still, there's a little bit of fluctuation because that the one of the fees that goes in there is the pathologist fee, and that goes up at least $6,000 a year.
I see. Okay. So, and you've got to pay the doctor whether you do it here or in Bloomington.
Right. It's the same doctor. He travels here instead, but he comes in and says my fee goes up this year so much.
And then, sorry, just one more question. 511.9 overtime. Looks like you're anticipating a doubling in overtime this year.
That's actually a switching. That's another line item like the fees. It goes between the temporary employee salaries and the overtime. And what has happened is in the past, I've just moved that down because what's happened is using the temporary employees, the union employees, my deputies, have the option many times when they go into overtime to use comp time versus just get paid overtime.
Okay, I see where you took that out of the previous line. Thank you.
All right, any other questions for the coroner?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry, my name is Mr. Kimberly.
So year over year, or since 2011, would it be safe to say that we have gained roughly
6,000.
Well, 6,000 there and 17,000 up here, about 23,000 from setting up our own autopsies?
In fees? Here. I'll pass this around. I threw this together tonight before I came here just in case there were questions.
I'm just taking that 19,000.
This is our revenue since 2007. If you look at that, you'll pass it around. I took each year how much revenue we collected total, whether it's from fees, whatever. I've only been doing autopsies since November of last year. So you can see, once you get this sheet, I started with 2007, and from 2007 to 2008, our revenue went up about a little over $7,000. From 2008 to 2009, our total revenue went up about $2,300. From 2009 to 2010, our revenue went down $5,600. That was when the change in the law took place where our fees actually went up. And what happened is we saw a reverse. Our fees went up, but people purchased less things because they sat there and went, wait a minute, that fee's a lot higher than it used to be. So a lot of that we sold. Oh, sorry, I didn't hand those over. We actually had less reports, purchases, so far. But then in 2010, we jumped back up a total from 2010 to 2011. We jumped up $24,000. And then in from 2011 to 2012, we jumped. I'm projecting we jumped up another $20,000.
because this year is not over yet, but those are the differences. We opened the morgue, so we're jumping up. My estimate is we're jumping up about not quite 20,000 in morgue fees and reimbursements from that we're getting just from last year to this year. And then next year, because we didn't have the morgue open all year, we opened it in November of last year. So between this year and next year, I'm estimating the 65.8 is about where we're going to be, because I think we're going to be capped off. Unless another county starts coming in and wants to use our facility, then we might see some more revenue. That's possible. But those are the jumps you can see there. And primarily the jumps in the morgue came between 2011-2012. Does that make sense? Or kind of?
Mr. Kibler. Yeah.
I was waiting for this particular part, but page 114, can you talk about the two things that you're asking for, specifically replacing the broken unit? We charge $53,000. How much will that save us in terms of not having to perform autopsies? And then secondly, what would be your overall priority if we could only take one of these two? What would you hope for?
The x-ray machine, we have an x-ray machine now that unfortunately broke down on us. We've had it the entire time I've been in the coroner's office. It's a 1983, I think. It still uses chemicals. There's tubes that run down for the developer and chemicals. I paid last year about $1,200 to have it serviced when we opened the new facility. I went ahead and had them service it, and they serviced it. We used it about three times, and it quit working again. I had them come out and work on it, and they basically told me we can't get any parts for it anymore. I had literally purchased a funnel for the developer, and I was told to dump water into this certain section before we did the x-rays, and it should hold enough water to do the x-rays we need. It doesn't. I basically can pour the water in, it runs right out. And they basically said we can't get parts for it anymore. So we have to have that, because an autopsy costs about $1,100 minimum, not including toxicology. There are cases like burn bodies, shooting victims, children have to be x-rayed because they may have old injuries. We have to find the bullet. If they're charred, we have to make identification, look for injuries. Decomposed bodies we run into a lot, especially in the summertime. They all have to be x-rayed. That's something we have to have. The cooler is, we have a three-body cooler. We're full most of the time. If I had to choose, and I would have to go with the x-ray machine, because everybody, even the state's attorney, the police, we got to have the x-rays. I continue to bounce bodies here and there, so to speak, to find a place for them to be kept. That was not literally, figuratively, I guess. But so that's the choices. And again, I wasn't expecting to have to replace the x-ray machine, but, you know, judging by its age and everything, you know, and now everything's digital. So technically, that price for replacement is for a used digital machine. That's not even new. New is over $100,000, but the company that sells them said they could get us one for about that price that actually uses, we would have a computer monitor now when we take the picture. There's no developing films. It would all go on the disk or on the computer now. We wouldn't have to use, we're literally still using films. And hospitals, nobody's using that hardly anymore. I mean, it's so outdated.
Mr. Kibler, do you have any more questions?
No, I think that's enough. Thank you.
Mr. Mitchell.
The counties that you're working with outside of Champaign County, do they bring 100% of their autopsies to you, or do they use other counties?
The counties that I'm working with right now, to my knowledge, are bringing 100% of their cases here, and they've all said they like coming here. It's convenient for them. They like the facility. It's working out well. But as far as I know, they're bringing all their cases here.
That's a question that. With regard to marketing, but if you had exclusive relationships with counties and could offer them package deals or something to make sure that you're the choice.
I mean, The facility that we have is
hard to negotiate.
I mean, I'm not just saying it because it's our facility, but the facility we have turned out very nice, and I've had a lot of compliments on it from coroners who have been to other facilities, and I think that's why they are bringing all their cases here. To why other counties aren't that could be coming here, I have suspicions why, but it's kind of out of my control, so to speak.
Well, I'm just thinking that if you could establish exclusive relationships with people, that maybe you could offer them a little bit of a discount, so that you know you're
Champaign County, great place to die. Yeah.
It's to be honest with you, it's kind of a professional relationship issue. For years,
we're getting off board here.
I mean, I am working on it.
Any one of us that made that crack, you would have ruled us out of order.
Well, it's getting late. No, it's only better order.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sure, thank you. If anybody has any other questions, yeah, feel free to call me.
Emergency Management Agency.
Did you sell that machine then?
If I could, I would.
For parts.
Good evening. I promise I won't be as lengthy as the last presenter.
Thank you.
Depends
on what we ask.
The emergency management budget, there aren't a lot of changes from last year. I will go over some highlights, though. There are just a couple of significant points. One of them is that earlier this year we did receive some additional monies that really came in from the state of Illinois. It was extra monies in the emergency preparedness grant, and that was really $2,011 dollars. We also this year, it was about April of this year, we did apply for the grant, which is known as the acronym LEPC, which is the Local Emergency Planning Committee, which is a grant program that that our department had not participated in since 2005, and so that has brought some monies in for this year, and that's why you'll see in this year that the projected revenue was increased. Now, as we go into next year, we're looking at a couple of things have happened. One is that we're continuing on with this LEPC, so that'll bring in grant funds for us. Also, the City of Champaign will not be going for their accreditation and under the IEMA statute, and so us as the county will be receiving some monies that would have gone to the City of Champaign will be coming to us, meaning the county. So that's why as you look, we project out of next year, you see that it's real. That's where the two increases from the previous year. On the expense side, just a couple of comments on that. We have some modest increases in the office supplies and also in operational supplies, but we have made an aggressive community outreach program, and we've had to really look at some of the expenditures that we needed to make on some of our emergency preparedness literature and that type of thing. So it's a modest increase, but it's basically just for having, as we do more outreach. On the fuel side, the gas has increased. Of course, two reasons. One is gas has gone up. The other reason is that we are doing more. As you look at the, kind of flipping to the back, when you look at our indicators, you'll see that we, as far as deployments and use of not only emergency activations and use of the command vehicle, for those of you that are familiar with E1, which is our command post vehicle, not only are we using that more, and we've been very aggressive to go to our local law enforcement and fire service to put us as a resource, and we've been called out more. So, I mean, that's a good thing because we want to be able to utilize that. So more and more as recently as, the Solo Cup fire and just a couple of weeks ago and that time. We hadn't really been called out by Urbana fire for quite some time. So, that's building stronger relationships with our public service friends and also and using equipment. The other thing is that we're using equipment on community outreach. So we were out, Rantoul had a community event several here in Champaign-Urbana where we have actually taken on a Saturday. We were out at Play It Safe out at the county fairgrounds where we take E1, we take the vehicle out, and we use it as community outreach. So we're the problem is, of course, it costs gas. We've got fuel expenses on literature, that type of thing. But, you know, the outcome of that is really is putting us more and more in the forefront. Little things that it didn't cost any money because I've got a volunteer doing it, but we're on Facebook and we took our website and we've completely updated and upgraded that, and we have a couple of volunteers that that actually maintain that for us. When I know there's a comment earlier this evening about customer service and how we rate ourselves and that, and I think on the indicators that's where we tried to look at looking what are we doing to serve. As far as you'll see that as we look at next year, it's an increase in the number of exercises that we are either taking the lead or that we're participating in doing, and we're actively putting ourselves out and really helping out communities as far as when they have to do an emergency preparedness exercise. Also, the number of activations, and of course we added a new item, the emergency activation and events using the command post, and so we're going to judge ourselves on that, so kind of putting ourselves more in the forefront. Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Michaels.
Very quickly, you said that the money for the conferences and training was an addition to the revenue, so it should wash. Well, I see where there's been a little bit added to the line 33721 on page 115, but the net difference is actually down 1,000, and your expenditures are up 6. So is there something else that we're not getting in here that would at least make you come close to balancing?
You have to look at the original budget for fiscal 2012 and the actual from fiscal 2011 in that revenue line.
So the 157,000 versus the 63, is that what you're talking about?
Are you on page 115?
Well, 116 is where it ends.
Right, that's the total.
Yeah.
Okay, so there it's up $11,000 from what it was originally in fiscal year 2012.
Okay.
And in 2011, there was a Homeland Security grant that we received that was used for...
It was used for the remodeling of the Emergency Operations Center and EOC.
So that was a one-time grant.
Yeah, that was a one-time separate line grant.
That's great. Thanks.
Ms. Petrie.
Ms. Michaels took care of one of my questions. My second question is, you have a large chunk of money for conferences and training. Could you explain that a bit?
That's the that LAPC grant. That money that is the expense on that is offset by the increase that we received from the that we will be receiving from.
Okay, then. Re-identify for me where that is in revenue.
Part of the increase going from 52,000 originally fiscal 2012, and now the budget for fiscal 2013 is 62,000. And part of that grant was received in fiscal 12, but not entirely expended. And the explanation is on the line item justification form for that particular line.
Okay, last item has nothing to do with budget, but the last time you were before the county board, you had mentioned you were going to arrange an open house at your facility for the whole county board. Is that still on your tickler file?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. We'll be hearing about that soon.
I look forward to that. As a matter of fact, we just thought about it the other day, and that's, yeah, absolutely. We, matter of fact, we've been doing that. We've been using the Emergency Operations Center and that more and more. We had two different groups that had had meetings down there today, and so we're utilizing it more, and we're fine, and making some we'd love to show you what we've been able to do as far as the changes that we're making down there. So absolutely. Absolutely. We'll do that.
Mr. Jay.
I don't have a question. I do have a comment. I'm very pleased and proud of the performance you've given the EMA office since you took over. I'm hearing great things out in the rural areas of the county. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add to that. I wanted to say I appreciate the effort you've made to raise the profile of the office. I mean, I think I was very happy with our previous director, but I think the things you're doing to get out in the county, as you say, show people that the organization, you know, who aren't familiar with the organization sure. that exists, you know, demonstrate some of your capabilities. Things like that, I think, really help when we hear from taxpayers who want to ask, you know, what are we getting for our money? And I sure. think that's one way, that's one thing that we can point to that's very tangible. And I was going to commend you on your timing because, you know, in your argument that you never know what's going to happen, so you need an emergency management association. Apparently, we're going to get hit with a hurricane this weekend, so you never know, do you?
Let's hope not.
Okay, any other questions? John, thank you very much. You were shorter than the last one. Next up, probation court services. Deb, are you doing that?
Yes. Juvenile detention center starts on page 120. This is basically very much a status quo budget. At this point, the probation office is anticipating revenues from the state, which offset the salaries for the court services officers at JDC to remain fairly stable. But we don't know because the state hasn't really released that information yet. Right now, this budget is 91% personnel. The rest of it is to provide various services to the juveniles in the juvenile detention center. And moving on to page 125, the probation office budget, court services. Similarly, they do receive state reimbursement for a portion of court services officers' salaries. Again, it is a 98% budget. 98% of the budget is in personnel costs. And it is presented basically with no changes in those expenditures other than salary increases that were approved by the board. On page 130 is the probation services fund. This fund is, the revenue comes from a fee paid by probationers when they are on probation, a monthly fee that they pay for the service of having a probation officer work with them. The revenues or the expenditures in the fund do such things as support public service work projects, which provide, you know, an ability for defendants to complete court-ordered public service requirements. This fund contributes to the Champaign County Drug Court, and the fund has, over the last several years, been used to replenish whatever general corporate does not receive from the state for reimbursement of salaries. There is a transfer from probation service funds to offset that loss of revenue. And the courts have consistently provided that benefit to general corporate over the last several years. The fund has a fairly substantial fund balance, but the fund balance goal is high because if this revenue were to go away, they would use it to take at least a year to phase out the services that are currently provided. And then there is the Juvenile Intervention Services Fund, which is basically there's some money there that when it is appropriate will be budgeted to support any unique training opportunities for juvenile officers or outstanding programming that may become available should no other funding source be available. 2013, they've budgeted $12,000, which is effectively the fund balance of that fund. The Juvenile Information Sharing System grant, again, this is a grant that is received and used for additional services for juveniles who are involved in the system. And I think that's it.
Questions? Mr. Kibler.
Just a quick clarification question. On page 132, you're projecting a lower amount in the fund balance, but you're going to have a higher net revenue for this year. So I'm wondering if that's just a typo.
Yep.
That's correct.
We will check that out, Mr. Kibler.
Mr. Alex.
Question about the maximum capacity of the juvenile detention center. My understanding is that maximum capacity of 25 is significantly less than the building can hold and is dictated by staffing levels. Is that?
That's correct.
Correct.
I'm not sure the facility was ever filled to its 43-bed capacity. And when we went through significant budget cuts, the judiciary cut the staffing level to so that it would only accommodate 25 beds.
Okay. And do we have, but the assumption, although there's a statement to the effect that we expect the population to increase, we don't expect the population to increase to the point that it requires an increase in that staffing level?
No, and actually they do have a contract with another county for 5 of those beds, but in that contract it stated that if we need the beds, we would not house their juveniles in it, and our typical average census is somewhere between 18 and 22. So.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Questions? Ms. Holderfield.
I would just like some clarification. I've seen this item in several other of the budgets. It's the professional services. Can you explain what those professional services are and what they consist of and who are they providing them to?
It depends on what the budget is. Which fund are you looking at?
I'm sorry. Page 131, Probation Services Fund.
Professional services.
533.7.
I know the line item. It just depends on which budget you're looking at.
The probation services fund.
Right. They're probably using that for some of the programming services that they talk about in their summary. But for example, imagine that the SCRAM monitoring is probably paid for through professional services, which is it's a portion of the drug court effort where the drug court probationers wear an ankle bracelet which monitors whether or not they're using alcohol, and I believe that that's probably primarily what that line is for.
Where's this? Where's that? And which one are you talking about, the SCRAM?
It's in the budget highlights. It's the third paragraph.
Page 130.
Okay. Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. Okay, I see it. I missed it. So $25,000 of it is no. Okay, it's a whole thing. I'm sorry. I missed that. Okay.
I'm not sure it's the whole thing, but I do know that that is one of the...
Yeah, because that's not going to add up.
Anything else, Ms.
Holderfield? Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Carter.
Dale, what happened to the 2% tax we had for juvenile detention?
It's in a different fund. It isn't administered by court services. It's not in the court services department.
It's not in this fund. It's a different fund.
It's a different fund.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Mr. Kibble, of course.
Sorry, I didn't notice this before. I normally would, but the same issue is applied on page 138, where revenue is greater than expenditure, but our budget hasn't changed fund balance.
Those fund balance figures have not been updated.
Okay.
Do you see there 2010, 2011, 2012? It should be 2011, 12, and 13.
Ah, that makes sense.
So that is why they don't match up, and we will get that fixed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kibble. No. Anything else? All right, next. Physical plan.
Yep.
Hello. There's not a lot of major changes. Well, there are some changes. I'll try to make it short and sweet for you this evening. Our revenue is projected to drop just a little bit, but if we get our new tenant in, possibly it could be increased back to where we're at. On the employees, we made a slight change this year where we had a grounds worker retire. So from 511 on page 141, line item 511.3, regular full-time employees, we've reduced that this year a little bit, and we've took those fees and rolled them into the temporary salary and wages, where we're going to try to go with seasonal grounds workers instead of full-time employees. Um, I am not going to go through each line item unless you would like me to, so if you would please turn to the page 148, I believe. The line item justification will show you the adjustments we've attempted to make this year. And the explanation involved for line 533-32, water service. There's a 18% increase charge that we've absorbed this year, and we are asking to adjust for next year's budget. 533-38, the stormwater utility fee created by the City of Urbana projected to start July 1, 2013. I have estimated a monthly fee of approximately $2,000. That's as close as I can get to until they actually finish the ordinance, so that would be about a $10,000 increase for next year, and unfortunately the next year it would be a $20,000 annual fee. The contract for labor increases in our contract for the elevator maintenance increased about $2,000, and that is spread among five different repair and maintenance light items. We are being charged a new fee by the City of Urbana this year for fire prevention permits for buildings that have sprinkler system in them to average out to about $125 a building, so that would be an increase of $1,200. 3.75% increase in sanitary service. Increased service and fuel charges for waste disposal, which we are absorbed this year, which went up. We've adjusted the job required travel line item 533-12. That is mainly due to the demographics of our employees, where we've had some retire who live close and others we've hired who live further away. So if the ones are on call, there's more mileage reimbursement. And then the next items, the operational supplies, automobile maintenance, equipment maintenance, Main Street jail repair and maintenance, and satellite jail repair and maintenance. We have been consistently way below budget each year. I've attempted to take it the high 5 or 6 year average of each line item and cost those out, and have asked for that increase to try to get those realistically in line of what we're actually spending on an average basis. The total all requested increases would be about $67,928. Okay. Now, any questions?
Questions. Mr. Kibler.
Wonderful. Going to page 2.
Which page?
2. I kid you not. 2. Of planning and zoning, and maybe you mentioned this at the
beginning.
Oh, we're in physical plant. We jumped ahead. Never mind then. Sorry,
Mr. Alex.
Alex, can you
remind
us who's paying us rent? I know Ilias and the Park Urbana Park District. Is anybody else paying us rent?
Yes, I certainly can. We have lease agreements with the Department of the Army Corps of Engineers for the property on East Main Street, the Illinois Attorney General here in Brookings, Mental Health Board here in Brookings, Access Initiative here in Brookings. MedCAD is paying rent for 1905, a portion of it. The Regional Planning Commission is renting Pod 100. Urbana Park District rents as part of our rental income. The Humane Society. And Dobbins Down Community Improvement, if you remember a couple years ago, the county takes an annual fee of $50, the annual fee for the property that they put that small little park on.
And if I can follow up, what was the difference in 2011 and 2012? We lost a lot of revenue there. What lease was that went away?
Didn't go away. Ilias prepaid 2013 and 2011,
oh, right.
And they're not paying in 2012, and they're not paying in 2013 either.
Okay.
Other questions? Comments?
Okay, Gary.
Oh, Mr. Maxwell.
Maxwell. On page 141, item 371-6, from Public Safety Sales Tax Fund. What do those funds go for?
I'm not sure.
That's to reimburse General Corporate for the cost of utilities in the public safety facilities.
Okay.
And that revenue is going down, and it needs to go down even more, but we, because public safety can't afford to continue funding that, which we'll talk about when we see the public safety sales tax fund budget, but so it's dropped by about $70,000 next year. It needs to continue going down in future years.
Mr. Mitchell.
Can you work with the municipality on the stormwater utility fee? I know that there's discounts if you do certain things.
We're getting any discounts we can. In most cases, those discounts are limited, like say there's a cap on them. And once you get that cap, that's it.
But I mean, is there things that you can do to the structure to you know where you're going to collect your own stormwater?
It's a pretty structured fee. You know, they cover about everything we do.
Okay, I just want to make sure we explore all the avenues so that if there is a savings, we can take advantage of it.
I don't understand. Okay, any other questions? All right. Thank you.
I believe Mr. Hall is going to have me present his budget, but he's here certainly if you have any questions. On probably one of the most notable things about the planning and zoning budget is the big jump in revenue in fiscal 2012 and drop back in fiscal 2013, and that's the wind farm that we received an application from for this year. We do not at this point anticipate another one next year. There was just one line item where there was a requested increase by, there were several. They're on page 7, the line items that required increases with the explanations. The total of all the increases was just $3,000. The rest of the planning and zoning budget is fairly much status quo. This budget is 74% in personnel costs, but one of the largest line items is the professional services line, which is where the county planning work contract with RPC is paid. So that's the $71,922. Any questions?
Questions for Deb or John? Ms. Michaels.
Sorry, Mr. Fuller. We're on this. We actually are kind of syncing about the same time here. I'm looking at the zoning use permits on page 2, 322-40. I know. The original was 166, but we're only budgeting 45 for next year on the income.
That is the wind farm application.
So that's
the that's
one
the wind
time.
Farm, right?
Okay.
Got it.
Well, I didn't know if we'd get other additional.
At this time, Mr. Hall does not anticipate any additional. Believe me, I begged him.
Mr. Kedler.
I figured there'd be one more.
Ms. Michaels and I are just, we're in sync today, so that's it.
Any other questions? Ms. Petrie.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't know if I have questions. That jump in revenue due to the wind turbine fees and income, how was it used?
It's in the general corporate fund. It was used for the general corporate fund operations.
Okay, well, I had this conversation last year that it bothers me a bit that all gets dumped into the general corporate fund and not any of it goes into the planning and zoning budget, so I'm going to raise it again this year. When I raised it last year, I just went for a minimal amount of 10%, and that 10% then could be used either, this budget has no conferences in it, and this budget has no funds for any interns, which would help lower some of the indicators here of backlog of work in that office. And I'd like to see that that's brought before the county board as a discussion point as to whether all of those monies generated by the wind farms goes into general corporate or if there's a way to negotiate some percentage of that to go into the planning and zoning budget. They do the work on it.
I understand, but also understand that even with that revenue in the fiscal year 2012 budget for the general corporate fund, you still adopted a deficit budget for general corporate for 2012.
Mr. Rosales.
Didn't we used to stash just a percentage of maybe 0.00 something percent from the proceeds of the wind farm to making our buildings green and energy saving costs?
There was talk about that. We never did that.
Pardon?
There was just talk, no action. But actually, I think there was a vote and failed, I recall.
We have not actually started receiving property tax revenue from wind farms yet either. We will not until 2014.
Thank you.
So we still could talk about it and do something. Any other questions? Mr. Jay, got a question?
No, sir, I do not.
All right. Next is County Clerk.
I didn't pick the orders, don't blame me, he's almost last.
I actually volunteered for this spot because I had a previous engagement at 6 o'clock and I was worried I wouldn't be here, so it's not that Pius hates me, or at least this isn't an indication that Pius hates me. He may hate me for some other reason, but... I have... Our office has four funds. I'll do general corporate last because it's the most complicated and it's where most of the questions will be, I anticipate. So if you'll start on page 154 with our county clerk surcharge fund. This is our death certificate surcharge fund. It's simply a pass-through. We collect a specific fee for each death certificate that we issue, and we are required to pass that fee along to the state of Illinois, so revenue matches expenditures. The next page, 628-22, is our grant fund. We have one grant that I anticipate next fiscal year. It's the voter registration state grant. It's usually in the neighborhood of $20,000. We actually just got our 2012 check for almost $18,000. We just got it this week. I anticipate that we will get some sort of voter registration state grant in FY13, so we're budgeting for 20. But with the condition of the state budget, that grant has fluctuated throughout the years. The other grant is the Federal Help America Vote Act, which we call our HAVA grant. That is the grant that we typically use to buy election equipment. It's used for voter education. We're currently sitting on about $148,000, $150,000 funds available from a grant agreement that we actually signed after the 2010 general election that was originally supposed to be used by the 2012 general election. Because the federal government is broken, the Election Assistance Commission, which is the agency in charge of administering that grant, doesn't actually have enough members to conduct business. And so that grant deadline has been extended to the 2014 general election. In reality, we've spent most of that $148,000 in the last 90 days on a poll book project, which the IT director alluded to a little bit briefly, and we can talk about a little bit more when we get to the general revenue fund. I do anticipate some of that HAVA grant money will roll over after the 2012 election and be available for us for the 2014 election cycle. It will be $10,000 or $20,000 of it, nowhere near the total $150,000 that's available now. Continuing to our third fund, our automation fund, on page 157. This is an automation fund like many other county departments have. We collect an automation fee relating to some of our document transactions. Our automation fund was very nearly exhausted at the beginning of last year. It has been, it had a balance at one point of several $100,000, and the previous county clerk used the automation fund over the years to supplement general office operations instead of cutting the operational budget, along with some of the other county budget cuts that took place over the years. So last year, early on in the year, we had to take some steps to stop draining our automation fund. We're at the point now where we'll actually slowly start to be able to build back up a fund balance. We are budgeting next year to anticipate spending every dime that we have available. In reality, I don't anticipate that we're going to do that unless we have an equipment need that we don't foresee right now. The goal is to slowly build that back up so that when we do run into a significant equipment need, especially in terms of our election equipment, that we'll be able to use the automation fund to handle some of those problems. Yes, sir.
wanted to talk to you about IT staff.
You want to talk about General Corp first?
Okay.
Page 149 of our packet is our General Corp budget 8022. It is actually a budget reduction for FY13 over FY12. That is largely due to the fact that next year we budget for about 1.5 elections instead of 2 elections. As you know, the off year we'll have a countywide election in April. We have the potential for a primary election in February. Sometimes we have the primary election in some precincts. Sometimes we don't have it in very many precincts. So we have to budget for about 1.5 elections, and we hope that there's no February primary anywhere and we won't have to spend any of those funds at all. Our revenue is going to increase about $74,000 over FY12. That revenue increase is largely due to an increase in election judge reimbursement funds from the state of Illinois. That's entirely related to the fact that we have an election in November of 2012 for which we will not receive reimbursement until FY13. So it actually looks like we get a much larger election judge reimbursement in off years when we actually use significantly fewer election judges. That's just because the lag in the state payment for the election judge reimbursement. Our county clerk fees, we do anticipate that we will experience a moderate growth. Death certificates, for whatever reason, we've far exceeded our expectations for death certificates in FY12. We don't particularly know why that is. Perhaps it's exceptional marketing on the part of our coroner. Champaign County is a great place to die. So we budget for a $20,000 increase in county clerk fees. I don't believe that budget reflects any change in marriage license or civil union license fees. It does not. I believe the county administrator is intending to discuss that with you at some point. As I said, our expenditures are based on conducting about 1.5 elections. In particular, we have the potential for a larger February primary than usual because the city of Urbana has their municipal elections this cycle where they didn't in 2011, and the city of Urbana, as you know, has partisan municipal elections, and so if more than one candidate of the same party files in Urbana, we have a primary regardless of whether it's 2 candidates in the same party or 9 candidates in the same party. Some of the things that we're doing with our expenditures in FY13, we are attempting, I think, for the first time to do some strategic budgeting. Our budget has been one in the county that has fluctuated to a significant degree between even years and odd years because of general elections versus consolidated elections. For FY13, we are going to anticipate some of our expenses for FY14. And we're going to stock up on as many things as we can in FY13 so that we don't have to buy them in FY14 to try and level out some of the fluctuations in our total aggregate budget from year to year. There are some things we can't do that with. Overtime, as it relates to voter registration, election judges. You know, we can't pay for election judges in FY13 that we're going to use in FY14, but things like ballot paper, we can pre-buy voter registration forms, voter registration cards, spare parts for our election equipment. You know, we just lost 14 motherboards on 14 tabulators as part of our routine preventive maintenance. Each one of those motherboards is a $950 part, so we just had to buy $10,000 worth of motherboards for 1992 level technology that we can't get any other way because it's federally certified. So our spare parts for our election equipment are essentially exhausted. And I don't really want to use our FY12 budget to stock up on parts, so we're going to do it in FY13 and buy enough parts in FY13 to cover both FY13 and 14. We'll do the same thing with ballot paper and voter registration cards and so on and so forth. Everything that we can anticipate we will need in 14, we'll try and purchase it in 13 so that in 14 we don't have to come to you and say, yeah, we need $150,000 more than we had last year. It'd be nice to bounce around that middle $900,000 level. It'd make the county administrator a little happier, I think. So we've had some significant operational changes in our office, some of which you are aware of, some of which you are not. Some have had a significant budget impact. Our in-house ballot printing project has gone extraordinarily well. It'll save us about $24,000 in FY2012. It will save us money every election moving forward. And that savings is essentially at no cost to the county. The only thing we have to buy now for ballots is paper. because the equipment that we needed to take on the capability was part of the copier contract that you renewed last year as part of the entire county. We worked with the county administrator and the IT department on it. It has been an incredible success, and I don't know if any of you remember the problems that other jurisdictions had in the primary election where their ballots were the wrong size and their tabulators wouldn't read them. We didn't have that, in part because we have absolute control of our entire ballot process here in Champaign County, and that's a significant thing for us, both operationally and fiscally. Our online marriage and civil union applications, we process somewhere on 25 to 30% of our marriage and civil union applications now online, which means the applicants provide us with all of their information from their home, send it to us securely, and when they come here to the office, we can get them in and out the door in 5 minutes instead of 30 minutes. That's allowed us to reduce our staffing in our vital records department by a half-time, part-time position. So we saved a significant amount there. Consolidation of our local redistricting efforts with federal, state, and county redistricting efforts. City of Urbana, Urbana School Districts, and City of Champaign coordinated their redistrictings for their subdistricts with your efforts with the state and with the federal government. The result of that is that we didn't have to print 80,000 voter registration cards for every resident of the City of Urbana and City of Champaign and mail them a second time, a new voter registration card. It was an enormous undertaking by those local districts. They didn't have to do it. They did it for us because we asked them to, and it was a nice example of cooperation, and it saved us a ton of money. Online absentee ballot application, that'll be new for this fall, and that will save us several thousand dollars in postage. It'll actually save administrative services several thousand dollars worth of postage. Previously, somebody would call us and request an absentee ballot. We would generate an absentee ballot application for them, mail it to them. They would sign it, mail it back to us. We would mail them a ballot. They would mail it back to us. So essentially two steps, two pieces of postage. We've now got the ability on our website. The voter can go to our website, plug in their information, generate a PDF with their pre-printed ballot application, print it off, sign it, and mail it to us. So we don't have to mail them a ballot application anymore. And we're going to push everybody who asks for an absentee ballot to that system so that they actually bear the initial brunt of the postage and we don't have to. Off-site early voting, we talked about this at County Board, I think, in June. That will initially result in a little bit of an expenditure increase for us. We're going to have to rent some additional equipment in terms of trucks and delivery. We've got facilities. We've got, you know, some initial exploring to do in terms of equipment and expenses. Once all of those things are figured out, that will stabilize, and the recurring expense will be the election judges. Oddly enough, because of the way we do our personnel accounting here, that doesn't come out of our election judge budget line. It will actually come out of our temporary employees budget line. So if you look and see our temporary employees budget line stays the same from FY12 to FY13, that's for our election judges for off-site early voting. It'll cost us somewhere in the neighborhood of $20,000 to staff all seven off-site early voting locations for roughly the same number of hours that the early voting site is available here at Brookins. In the long run, we think that's going to be a budgetary savings for us, because if we can get our early voting proportions in line with where most other large counties are, we anticipate we'll be able to use fewer election judges on election day. And so we'll save money on election day judges by essentially spending money on election days on election judges for early voting. And then the last operational change that will have a significant budgetary impact for us is something that we really haven't announced publicly yet because we haven't fully tested it. We're going to replace our paper ballot applications. We're going to replace our paper ballot applications. For those of you who voted at a polling place, you're familiar that when you go to the judges and tell the judges your name, they have a number of thick books of ballot applications, one that is pre-generated for every registered voter in the county. We spend about $10,000 per election right now printing those 125,000 sheets of paper, because we print one for every single registered voter in Champaign County. It not only was operationally not an efficient use of our time and energy, it's expensive, and it actually creates some security vulnerabilities for us in terms of how we administer our election. So after the primary, we took a good hard look at it. and we had talked with some vendors about the idea of exploring electronic poll books, which is the fancy election administration term for we're going to use laptops at our polling places to check in voters. It's not going to impact ballots. You will still vote on the same ballot. Your ballot will still be counted the same way. You will simply be checked in at the polling place on a laptop by election judges instead of having them flip through a big book of 10,000 pages of... we used our $148,000 in HAVA grant funds to purchase all of the equipment for poll books. So 225 laptops, which is enough for a minimum of two per polling place. Some polling places will get more. Mice, wireless hotspots to get them on the internet, and all of the power strips and random accrued laptop bags, all of the things that go along with deploying that sort of equipment were covered by the HAVA grant. They're all reimbursed. They haven't been covered yet. They're all reimbursement eligible. We checked it all before we bought the equipment. We're not going to be on the hook for any of it. And like I said, these HAVA grant funds are something that we had to use anyway. So for those who are asking about the addition of 225 laptops to the county clerk's office, that's what those are. They won't be on the county network. They'll get used twice a year. They're the exact same equipment we're going to use for our off-site early voting locations. We're excited about it. We haven't fully tested it yet. We programmed it in-house using some of the shared IT resources. The vendor packages that we looked at, because we went to three or four vendors and talked to them about what their packages were, and the quotes that they threw at us started at $375,000 and went up to about $1 million for a county our size. Because we have incredibly talented people in our office, we created the program in-house. We were able to acquire the equipment, you know, using the grant at no expense to the county general corporate fund. And we're going to test it significantly next week, and we're confident that we'll be able to use it for November. If we don't use it for November, we will use it for April. So that's our budget. I'm sure you have lots of questions. Election administration, I know, is near and dear to all of you because you've all been candidates for office. So, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Curtis.
I just want to discuss that last statement.
Can you close to the microphone?
I'm sorry. All of a sudden, this... Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. This new system, I would like to see you use it in April. And the reason I say that is if... usually, the first time you use a system, there's glitches. And November is a very, very important election, big election. And my suggestion is maybe you can test it, but what if we face glitches when you have lines of people?
We'll have the old system as our backup.
Thank you.
Sure. And to be perfectly honest with you, we want to use it in November because it will allow us to process voters much more efficiently. Our vendor demonstrations of electronic poll books allowed them to process a voter in 45 seconds.
Well, at least the backup. That's what I was...
And what has been a significant complaint of large general elections in Champaign County over the years is lines at polling places. And so we want to be able to move people through polling places at our busiest election as quickly as possible. And, you know, I haven't really talked about the security aspects of this, but all of these polling places will be networked back to our central server. So we'll have absolute real-time knowledge of everybody who votes and tries to vote in Champaign County. So, you know, if somebody votes early at our office at 5 o'clock on Monday, the day before the election, and then goes to the polling place at 6 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday and tries to vote with the old paper system, they could probably get away with it. Sorry, their vote would get counted twice. They wouldn't get away with it because we would know they had cast two ballots and they would get prosecuted. It's a felony to try. Don't try. But the online system, the first thing it does is it pulls a list of late absentee and early voters for us. We don't have the security hole.
So maybe we should use that system nationwide and we wouldn't have to have laws for voter ID fraud.
Are you proposing that I be in charge of elections nationwide?
Nationwide, yes.
Appreciate that, Mr. Kurtz.
Mr. Langenheim, microphone, please.
How many felonies have we prosecuted here for multiple voting?
Mr. Langenheim, that has nothing to do with the budget.
I've had three cases I've investigated.
There you go. Mr. Quisenberry.
Okay, I think I was one of the people looking at your budget last year.
You were.
And we agreed that it was a 20-year event, right?
It was.
Because presidential election this year.
Redistricting.
Redistricting, everything all at once. Do you feel like you've been able to, you talked about being able to back up for next year because this was a big year. Do you feel like you've been able to back up as far as you can?
Well, I think some of it's the uncertainty related to whether or not we're going to have a primary in February. If we don't have a primary in February, I anticipate saving tens of thousands of dollars in election administration costs that will return to the county general fund. In FY11, we returned almost $40,000. So I think we have to budget as if we have a primary, and then cross our fingers and hope we don't.
Okay. And back to what I started to talk about beforehand, I also recall last year in that discussion that you were amenable to talking about IT staff being consolidated, but you didn't want to do it this year because of the federal election.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you have a year under your belt and we're going to be past the federal election, can we really talk about revisiting that?
Well, we have two IT people, I guess, who are sort of in our office. One is our programmer analyst. If you remember last year's budget, we came to you with a request for a position to be added to our budget for a programmer analyst. That position was not added to our office. The position, however, was added to IT. It was actually a transition from another position that was unfilled. So that position works very closely with us, actually is accountable to the IT department and an employee of the IT department. So we've integrated that person fully with the IT department. The second technology position we have is our technology specialist. That person's paid half out of our general corporate fund, half out of our automation fund. That person is someone that I am very reluctant to transition fully to IT because that person is responsible for our election equipment, ballot programming, election software, and what they do is entirely specific to our office. And I don't know that we'd ever talked about transitioning the technology specialist to IT because the last conversation that we had about it, the IT audit, I thought, recommended more people like that in the larger offices to act as frontline IT troubleshooters to relieve some of the burden from IT. That said,
does she do that?
She doesn't. It's a he. They're two different positions. She is the programmer. He is the technology specialist. However, I think over the last 18 months, and Deb may be able to speak to this a little more fully from her perspective, we have integrated all of our office operations a lot more fully with IT than they ever have been before. Where, you know, we've engaged in cooperative projects on website redevelopment for the county to try and build the county's a new website using both the programmer who works for IT and our technology specialist who has more web programming expertise than I think anybody else at the county at this point. But to move the technology specialist out of our office, I think would actually be counterproductive because that person, their responsibilities are wholly to our office. And I think it's wise to keep that person accountable to our office, specifically for the election-related responsibilities that they have. The troubleshooting responsibilities, sure, they can. To me, it makes a lot of sense to consolidate those in IT. But this technology specialist relieves a burden from IT because they're already in my office doing the election-related work.
But the work that they're doing that's special to your office is time-based. It's heavier at certain times of the year and with certain election cycles, and we could use more web expertise in the county as well. So,
oh, and we've made this person available to the county for web related things. You know, during the month and a half last year when we were actually slow with election related stuff. You know, but this person isn't just election related. They assisted with the programming of our online marriage and civil union applications. They're responsible for the technical transition that we're making so that we can accept credit card payments at our payment desk instead of having our customers stand in the corner and use a computer terminal and enter their credit card information into a website. So they're functionally integral to the office. And at this point, you know, it's not a territorial thing. To me, it would be counterproductive to have them be accountable to the IT director so that every time I need something, I have to go to the IT director and say, our vitals printer won't print receipts.
could you please send Mr. Hesse down so that we can troubleshoot it?
Okay, and the last question, what's your support model for Election Day with all these laptops out there and the networking demands that you're going to have with that?
Support model.
Well, you've got, I assume election judges
yes.
are going to be operating these devices.
Yes.
For the first time ever.
Not well, no, because they'll be trained.
Not all of whom are necessarily technology savvy.
Correct.
I heard, I assume they're like MiFi units mm-hmm. to network in, which don't always work consistently. What is your plan for when 15 polling places have a problem at the same time?
We have, for some time now, have what we call our coordinators on Election Day. They're essentially super election judges. We assign them a handful of polling places each, all in the same geographic area, and they are our on-call troubleshooters throughout the day. They rotate through the various polling places that they're assigned, and they help us troubleshoot election administration issues, tabulators that don't work, laptops that won't connect to the Wi-Fi. And if a laptop should happen to not connect to Wi-Fi, everything else will still function. You know, we can still process voters with all the data will be contained locally. We can still handle everything, and, you know, we can update last-minute voters on a paper list if we absolutely have to. So a failed connection is not the end of the world. And we're going to do a scaled test next week that will involve 150 or 200 laptops all coming online at the same time to test exactly that scenario.
Because I just foresee the potential for a need for more staffing for that kind of role if we start pushing more technology.
I foresee it in the middle of the night, 3 days a week. It's my biggest concern.
Other questions? Ms. Petrie.
I have two clarification questions. Page 155. This is a curiosity question, mostly.
It's curiosity killed the cat.
I know. 533-7.
Yes.
Well, there were professional services that were quite pricey in 2012, and then there's a considerable drop. Could you explain that?
This is our grant fund.
Oh, that's
we budgeted for maximum expenditure authority in our grant fund, and when we went and purchased the 225 laptops, we did a budget transfer to transfer that expenditure okay. authority from professional services to equipment less than 1,000 or whatever line item the auditor demands that we pay for the laptops from.
Okay, I appreciate that. Then second is when you were explaining being able to request an absentee ballot online, print it off in a PDF and send it to you. Can't they just electronically send it to you?
The law requires an original signature.
Oh, it can't be an electronic signature.
Correct. Everything election-related has to be an original signature on paper.
I see. Thank you.
Other questions? All right. Well, I will say that being a former election judge, I'm glad you're getting rid of the books because I'd never like to search function on them.
I'll loosen up the operator.
All right.
Thank you. Oh, Patsy.
Can I just say something first?
Yeah.
I see you all falling asleep, and I'm really not looking forward to presenting these next budgets. And I think tomorrow night is much lighter. So with one exception, because Jane Quinlan, Regional Office of Education Superintendent, has been sitting here all night, I would like to defer everything except the ROE budget on page 172, which should go fairly quickly, if you would be willing to do that one.
Actually, is there any dissent? We'll just do it then.
Okay.
Thank you, Gordon.
The Regional Office of Education, in preparing their budget, followed the guidelines given by the County Board. And if you look at their budget, which is our share of the Regional Office of Education operation, page 172, is funded out of the contribution and grants line item in this budget. The projected expenditure for 2012 at this point is $203,310, and the budget request is $206,598, and that corresponds entirely to an allowance for 2% personnel increases, which is consistent with all of your other general corporate fund department budgets. And that's basically it. This just gets paid out of general corporate revenue.
Any questions on that? Could we have a motion to accept and place on file?
I'm sorry, I just have a...
Mr. Alex,
everybody
question.
Wrong, I heard
go ahead,
wrong.
Mr. Alex. Go ahead, go ahead.
You got 2 minutes till 9:30.
What are the other funding sources for the Regional Office of Education?
Well, it's split between Ford County and Champaign County for the county portion of it. And like I said, Jane is here and could speak to it, but they do receive funding from the state, right?
There are actually a lot of
some entitlement grants that we receive, and then we also write competitive grants for some certain programs that we receive. So that is the
Would you say there's about 10 different sources?
And none of that is reflected in the county budget.
That's right.
They have their own separate budget, which I have if anyone is interested in seeing it.
Okay, so of the 3.5 FTE, there are 3.5 FTEs shown in the FTE history. That's the portion that are paid for by the county, or that is everybody?
No.
That's simply the portion paid for by the county.
By Champaign County, okay.
And Ford County, but it's our share.
The 3.5 is our share? Or
there are 3.5 employees paid for by the two counties. The Ford County share is minimal compared to ours. It's based on EAV.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, I'd like to have a motion to accept, place on file all of the 17 budget presentations and plus the ROE portion of the administrative services.
So moved.
Second. Mr. Jay, second by Mr. Quisenberry. Discussion, see none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Please remember to bring both books tomorrow night. You don't have to bring regional planning, but bring the blue book and the purple book. Yeah, that's fine.
Leave my desk.
Always a pleasure, sir.
What?
I know you need to.